64. A man of extremes. They come from the pit. Two dead men. A heart in their hands, and I know that I have seen true glory. Kakasha, 1173. 13 seconds pre-death. A rickshaw puller.
I couldn't decide if you were interested or not, Navani said softly to Dalinar,
as they slowly walked around the grounds of Elikar's raised field palace.
Half the time you seemed like a flirt, offering hints at courtship, then backing away. The other half of the time I was certain I had misread you. And Gavilar was so forthcoming. He always did prefer to seize what he wished.
Dalinar nodded thoughtfully. He wore his blue uniform, while Navani was in a subdued maroon dress with a thick hem. Elikar's gardeners had begun to cultivate the plant life here. To their right, a twisting length of yellow shale bark rose to waist height like a railing. The stone-like plant was overgrown by small bunches of haspers, with pearly shells slowly opening and closing as they breathed. They looked like tiny mouths, silently speaking in rhythm with one another. Dalinar and Navani's pathway took a leisurely course up the hillside. Dalinar strolled with hands clasped behind his back. His honor guard and Navani's clerks followed behind. A few of them looked perplexed at the amount of time Dalinar and Navani were spending with one another. How many of them suspected the truth? All? Part? None? Did it matter?
I didn't mean to confuse you all those years ago, he said, voice soft to keep it from prying ears. I had intended to court you, but Galavar expressed a preference for you. So eventually I felt I had to step aside.
Just like that? Navani asked.
She sounded offended.
He didn't realize that I was interested. He thought that by introducing you to him, I was indicating that he should court you. That was often how our relationship worked. I would discover people Gavilar should know, then bring them to him. I didn't realize until too late what I had done in giving you to him.
Giving me? Is there a slave's brand on my forehead of which I've been unaware?
I did not mean...
Oh, hush,
Navani said, her voice suddenly fond. Dalinar stifled a sigh. Though Navani had matured since their youth, her moods always had changed as quickly as the seasons. In truth, that was part of her allure.
Did you often step aside for him? Navani asked.
Always.
Didn't that grow tiresome?
I didn't think about it much, Dalinar said. When I did, yes, I was frustrated. But it was Gavilar. You know how he was. That force of will, that air of natural entitlement. It always seemed to surprise him when someone denied him or when the world itself didn't do as he wished. He didn't force me to defer. It was simply how life was.
Navani nodded in understanding.
Regardless, Dalinar said, I apologize for confusing you. I had difficulty letting go. I fear that, on occasion, I let too much of my true feelings slip out.
Well, I suppose I can forgive that, she said. Though you did spend the next 2 decades making certain I thought you hated me.
I did nothing of the sort.
Oh? And how else was I to interpret your coldness, the way you would often leave the room when I arrived?
Containing myself, Dalinar said. I had made my decision.
Well, it looked a lot like hatred, Navani said. Though I did wonder several times what you were hiding behind those stony eyes of yours. Of course, then, shh, came along.
As always, when the name of his wife was spoken, it came to him as the sound of softly rushing air, then slipped from his mind immediately. He could not hear or remember the name.
She changed everything, Navani said. You truly seemed to love her.
I did, Dalinar said.
Surely he had loved her, hadn't he? He could remember nothing.
What was she like? He quickly added. I mean, in your opinion. How did you see her?
Everyone loved, Navani said. I tried hard to hate her, but in the end I could only be mildly jealous.
You? Jealous of her? Whatever for?
Because, Navani said, she fit you so well, never making inappropriate comments, never bullying those around her, always so calm. Navani smiled. Thinking back, I really should have been able to hate her, but she was just so nice. Though she wasn't very... well...
What? Dalinar asked.
Clever, Navani said. She blushed, which was rare for her. I'm sorry, Dalinar, but she just wasn't. She wasn't a fool, but... well, not everyone can be cunning. Perhaps that was part of her charm.
She seemed to think that Dalinar would be offended. It's all right, he said. Were you surprised that I married her?
Who could be surprised? As I said, she was perfect for you.
Because we were matched intellectually, Dalinar said dryly.
Hardly. But you were matched in temperament. For a time after I got over trying to hate her, I thought that the four of us could be quite close. But you were so stiff toward me.
I could not allow any further lapses to make you think that I was still interested. He said the last part awkwardly. After all, wasn't that what he was doing now? Lapsing? Navani eyed him.
There you go again.
What?
Feeling guilty. Dalinar, you are a wonderful, honorable man, but you really are quite prone to self-indulgence.
Guilt? As self-indulgence? I never considered it that way before. She smiled deeply.
What?
He asked.
You really are genuine, aren't you, Dalinar?
I try to be, he said. He glanced over his shoulder. Though the nature of our relationship continues to perpetuate a kind of lie.
We've lied to nobody. Let them think or guess what they wish.
I suppose you are right.
I usually am.
She fell silent for a moment.
Do you regret what we have...
No, Dalinar said sharply, the strength of his objection surprising him. Navani just smiled. No, Dalinar continued more gently. I do not regret this, Navani. I don't know how to proceed, but I am not going to let go. Navani hesitated beside a growth of tiny fist-sized rock buds with their vines out like long green tongues. They were grouped almost like a bouquet, growing on a large oval stone placed beside the pathway.
I suppose it's too much to ask for you to not feel guilty, Navani said. Can't you let yourself bend just a little?
I'm not certain if I can, particularly not now. Explaining why would be difficult.
Could you try to? For me?
Well, I'm a man of extremes, Navani. I discovered that when I was a youth. I've learned repeatedly that the only way to control those extremes is to dedicate my life to something. First it was Gavilar. Now it's the codes and the teachings of Noadon. They're the means by which I bind myself, like the enclosure of a fire, meant to contain and control it. He took a deep breath. I'm a weak man, Navani. I really am. If I give myself a few feet of leeway, I burst through all of my prohibitions. The momentum of following the codes these years, after Gavilar's death, is what keeps me strong. If I let a few cracks into that armor, I might return to the man I once was. A man I never want to be again. A man who had contemplated murdering his own brother for the throne, and for the woman who had married that brother. But he couldn't explain that.
didn't dare let Navani know what his desire for her had once almost driven him to do. On that day, Dalinar had sworn that he could never hold the throne himself. That was one of his restraints. Could he explain how she, without trying, pried at those restraints? How it was difficult to reconcile his long-fermenting love for her with his guilt at finally taking for himself what he'd long ago given up for his brother?
"You are not a weak man, Dalinar," Navani said.
"I am. But weakness can imitate strength if bound properly, just as cowardice can imitate heroism if given nowhere to flee."
"But there's nothing in Gavilar's book that prohibits us. It's just tradition that..."
"It feels wrong," Dalinar said. "But please, don't worry. I do enough worrying for both of us. I will find a way to make this work. I just ask your understanding. It will take time. When I display frustration, it is not with you, but with the situation."
"I suppose I can accept that. Assuming you can live with the rumors. They're starting already."
"They won't be the first rumors to plague me," he said. "I'm starting to worry less about them and more about Elokar. How will we explain to him?"
"I doubt he'll notice," Navani said,
snorting softly, resuming her walk. He followed.
"He's so fixated on the Parshendi and occasionally the idea that someone in camp is trying to kill him."
"This might feed into that," Dalinar said. "He could read a number of conspiracies out of the two of us entering a relationship."
"Well, he..."
Horns began sounding loudly from below. Dalinar and Navani stopped to listen and identify the call.
"Stormfather," Dalinar said. "That's the tower itself, where a chasm fiend has been seen. It's one of the plateaus Sadeus has been watching."
Dalinar felt a surge of excitement.
"High princes have failed every time to win a gem heart there. It will be a major victory if he and I can do it together."
Navani looked troubled.
"You're right about him, Dalinar. We do need him for our cause. But keep him at arm's length."
"Wish me the wind's favor."
He reached toward her, but then stopped himself. What was he going to do? Embrace her here in public? That would set off the rumors like fire across a pool of oil. He wasn't ready for that yet. Instead, he bowed to her, then hastened off to answer the call and collect his shard plate. It wasn't until he was halfway down the path that he paused to consider Navani's choice of words. She had said, "We need him for our cause." What was their cause? He doubted that Navani knew either. But she had already started to think of them as together in their efforts. And, he realized, so did he. The horns called, such a pure and beautiful sound to signify the imminence of battle. It caused a frenzy in the lumberyard. The orders had come down. The tower was to be assaulted again, the very place where Bridge 4 had failed, the place where Kaladin had caused a disaster. Largest of the plateaus, most coveted. Bridgemen ran this way and that for their vests. Carpenters and apprentices rushed out of the way. Matal shouted orders. An actual run was the only time he did that without Hashal. Bridge leaders, showing a modicum of leadership, bellowed for their teams to line up. A wind whipped the air, blowing wood chips and bits of dried grass into the sky. Men yelled, bells rang. And into this chaos strode Bridge 4, Kaladin at their head. Despite the urgency, soldiers stopped, bridgemen gaped, carpenters and apprentices stilled. 35 men marched in rusty orange carapace armor, expertly crafted by Leighton to fit onto leather jerkins and caps. They'd cut off arm guards and shin guards to complement the breastplates. The helms were built from several different headpieces, and had been ornamented, at Leighton's insistence, with ridges and cuts, like tiny horns or the edges of a crab's shell. The breastplates and guards were ornamented as well, cut into tooth-like patterns, each one reminiscent of a saw blade. Earless Jax had bought blue and white paint and drawn designs across the orange armor. Each member of Bridge Four carried a large wooden shield, strapped, tightly now, with red Parshendi bones. Ribs, for the most part, shaped in spiral patterns. Some of the men had tied finger bones to the centers, so they would rattle, and others had attached protruding sharp ribs to the sides of their helms, giving them the look of fangs or mandibles. The onlookers watched with amazement. It wasn't the first time they'd seen this armor, but this would be the first run where every man of Bridge Four had it. Altogether, it made an impressive sight. 10 days with 6 bridge runs had allowed Kaladin and his team to perfect their method. 5 men to be decoys, with 5 more in the front holding shields and using only one arm to support the bridge. Their numbers were augmented by the wounded they'd saved from other crews, now strong enough to help carry. So far, despite 6 bridge runs, there hadn't been a single fatality. The other bridgemen were whispering about a miracle. Kaladin didn't know about that. He just made certain to keep a full pouch of infused spheres with him at all times. Most of the Parshendi archers seemed to focus on him. Somehow they could tell that he was the center of all this. They reached their bridge and formed up, shields strapped to rods on the sides to await use. As they hefted their bridge, a spontaneous round of cheering rose up from the other crews.
"That's new," Teft said from Kaladin's left.
"Guess they finally realized what we are," Kaladin said.
"And what's that?"
Kaladin settled the bridge onto his shoulders. "We're their champions."
"Bridge forward!"
They broke into a trot, leading the way down from the staging yard, ushered by cheers. "My father is not insane," Adolin thought, alive with energy and excitement as his armorers strapped on his shardplate. Adolin had stewed over Navani's revelation for days. He'd been wrong in such a horrible way. Dalinar Kholin wasn't growing weak. He wasn't getting senile. He wasn't a coward. Dalinar had been right, and Adolin had been wrong. After much soul-searching, Adolin had come to a decision. He was glad that he'd been wrong. He grinned, flexing the fingers of his plated hand as the armorers moved to his other side. He didn't know what the visions meant or what the implications of those visions would be. His father was some kind of prophet, and that was daunting to consider. But for now, it was enough that Dalinar was not insane. It was time to trust him. Stormfather knew Dalinar had earned that right from his sons. The armorers finished with Adolin's shardplate. As they stepped away, Adolin hurried out of the armoring room into the sunlight, adjusting to the combined strength, speed, and weight of the shardplate. Niter and 5 other members of the Cobalt Guard hastened up, one bringing Sureblood to him. Adolin took the reins but led the Rashadium at first, wanting more time to adapt to his plate. They soon entered the staging area. Adolin's father, in his shardplate, was conferring with Teleb and Ilamar. He seemed to tower over them as he pointed eastward. Already, companies of soldiers were moving out onto the lip of the plains. Adolin strode up to his father, eager. In the distance, he noticed a figure riding down along the eastern rim of the war camps. The figure wore gleaming red shard plate.
"Father?"
Adolin said, pointing.
"What's he doing here? Shouldn't he be waiting for us to ride to his camp?"
Dalinar looked up. He waved for a groom to bring Gallant, and the two of them mounted. They rode down to intercept Sadeus, trailed by 12 members of the Cobalt Guard. Did Sadeus want to call off the assault? Was he worried about failing against the tower again? Once they drew close, Dalinar pulled up.
"You should be moving, Sadeus. Speed will be important if we're to get to the plateau before the Parshendi take the Gemheart and go."
The High Prince nodded.
"Agreed, in part. But we need to confer first. Dalinar, this is the tower we're assaulting."
He seemed eager.
"Yes, and?" "Damnation, man," Sadeus said. "You're the one who told me we needed to find a way to trap a large force of Parshendi on a plateau. The tower is perfect. They always bring a large force there, and two sides are inaccessible.
Adolin found himself nodding.
Yes, he said. Father, he's right. If we can box them in and hit them hard...
The Parshendi normally fled when they took large losses. That was one of the things extending the war so long.
It could mean a turning point in the war, Satius said, eyes alight. My scribes estimate that they have no more than 20 or 30,000 troops left. The Parshendi will commit 10,000 here. They always do. But if we can corner and kill all of them, we could nearly destroy their ability to wage war on these plains.
It'll work, Father, Adolin said eagerly. This could be what we've been waiting for, what you've been waiting for. A way to turn the war, a way to deal enough damage to the Parshendi that they can't afford to keep fighting.
We need troops, Dalinar, Satius said.
Lots of them. How many men could you field at a maximum?
On short notice, Dalinar said. 8,000, perhaps?
It will have to do, Satius said. I've managed to mobilize about 7,000. We'll bring them all. Get your 8,000 to my camp, and we'll take every one of my bridge crews and march together. The Parshendi will get there first. It's inevitable with a plateau that close to their side. But if we can be fast enough, we can corner them on the plateau. Then we'll show them what a real Alethi army is capable of.
I won't risk lives on your bridges, Satius, Dalinar said. I don't know that I can agree to a completely joint assault.
Bah, Satius said. I've got a new way of using bridgemen, one that doesn't use nearly as many lives. Their casualties have dropped to almost nothing.
Really?
Dalinar said.
Is it because of those bridgemen with armor? What made you change?
Satius shrugged.
Perhaps you're getting through to me. Regardless, we need to go now, together. With as many troops as they'll have, I can't risk engaging them and waiting for you to catch up. I want to go together and assault as closely together as we can manage. If you're still worried about the bridgemen, I can attack first and gain a foothold, then let you cross without risking bridgemen lives.
Dalinar looked thoughtful.
Come on, Father, Adolin thought. You've been waiting for a chance to hit the Parshendi hard. This is it.
Very well, Dalinar said. Adolin, send messengers to mobilize the 4th through 8th divisions. Prepare the men to march. Let's end this war.
The Tower. I see them. They are the rocks. They are the vengeful spirits. Eyes of red.
Kakakis, 1173. 8 seconds pre-death. A dark-eyed young woman of 15. Subject was reportedly mentally unstable since childhood. Several hours later, Dalinar stood with Satius on a rock formation overlooking the tower itself. It had been a hard, long march. This was a distant plateau, as far eastward as they had ever struck. Plateaus beyond this point were impossible to take. The Parshendi could arrive so quickly that they had the Gemheart out before the Alethi arrived. Sometimes that happened with the tower as well. Dalinar searched.
I see it, he said, pointing. They don't have the Gemheart out yet.
A ring of Parshendi were pounding on the chrysalis. Its shell was like thick stone, however. It was still holding.
You should be glad you're using my bridges, old friend.
Satius shaded his face with a gauntleted hand.
Those chasms might be too wide for a shardbearer to jump.
Dalinar nodded. The tower was enormous. Even its huge size on the maps didn't do it justice. Unlike other plateaus, it wasn't level. Instead, it was shaped like an enormous wedge that dipped toward the west, pointing a large cliff face in the stormward direction. It was too steep, and the chasms too wide, to approach from the east or south. Only 3 adjacent plateaus could provide staging areas for assaults, all along the western or northwestern side. The chasms between these plateaus were unusually large, almost too wide for the bridges to span. On the nearby staging plateaus, thousands upon thousands of soldiers in blue or red were gathered, one color per plateau. Combined, they made for a larger force than Dalinar had ever seen brought against the Parshendi. The Parshendi numbers were as large as anticipated. There were at least 10,000 of them lining up. This would be a full-scale battle, the kind Dalinar had been hoping for, the kind that would let them pit a huge number of Alethi against a large Parshendi force. This could be it. The turning point in the war. Win this day and everything would change. Dalinar shaded his eyes as well, helm under his arm. He noted with satisfaction that Sadius's scouting crews were crossing to adjacent plateaus, where they could watch for Parshendi reinforcements. Just because the Parshendi had brought so many at first didn't mean that there were no other Parshendi forces waiting to flank them. Dalinar and Sadius wouldn't be taken by surprise again.
"Come with me," Sadius said. "Let us assault them together. A single grand wave of attack across 40 bridges."
Dalinar looked down at the bridge crews. Many of their members were lying exhausted on the plateau, awaiting, likely dreading, their next task. Very few of them wore the armor Sadius had spoken of. Hundreds of them would be slaughtered in the assault if they attacked together. But was that any different from what Dalinar did? Asking his men to charge into battle to seize the plateau? Weren't they all part of the same army? The cracks. He wouldn't let them get wider. If he was going to be with Navani, he had to prove to himself he could remain firm in the other areas. "No," he said. "I will attack, but only after you've made a landing point for my bridge crews. Even that is more than I should allow. Never force your men to do as you yourself would not."
"You do charge the Parshendi."
"I'd never do it carrying one of those bridges," Dalinar said. "I'm sorry, old friend. It's not a judgment of you. It's what I must do." Sadius shook his head, pulling on his helmet.
"Well, it will have to do. We still planning on dining together tonight to discuss strategy?"
"I assume so, unless Elokar has a fit for both of us missing his feast." Sadius snorted.
"He's going to have to grow accustomed to it. 6 years of feasting every night is growing tedious. Besides, I doubt he'll feel anything but elation after we win this day and leave the Parshendi down a full third of their soldiers. See you on the battlefield."
Dalinar nodded, and Sadius jumped off the rock formation, dropping down to the surface below and joining his officers. Dalinar lingered, looking over at the tower. It was not only larger than most plateaus, it was rougher, covered with lumpish rock formations of hardened creme. The patterns were rolling and smooth, yet very uneven, like a field full of short walls covered by a blanket of snow. The southeastern tip of the plateau rose to a point overlooking the plains. The two plateaus they'd use were on the middle of the west side. Sadius would take the northern one, and Dalinar would assault from one just below it, once Sadius had cleared a landing for him. "We need to push the Parshendi to the southeast," Dalinar thought, rubbing his chin. "Corner them there." Everything hinged on that. The chrysalis was up near the top, so the Parshendi were already situated in a good position for Dalinar and Sadius to push them back against the cliff edge. The Parshendi would probably allow this, as it would give them the high ground. If a second Parshendi army came, it would be separated from the others. The Alethi could focus on the Parshendi trapped atop the tower, while holding a defensive formation against the new arrivals. It would work. He felt himself growing excited. He hopped down to a shorter outcropping, then walked down a few step-like clefts to reach the plateau floor, where his officers waited. He then rounded the rock formation, investigating Adolin's progress. The young man stood in his shard plate, directing the companies as they crossed Sadius's mobile bridges onto the southern staging plateau. In the near distance, Sadius's men were forming up for the assault. That group of armored bridgemen stood out, preparing at the front center of the formation of bridge crews. Why were they allowed armor? Why not all the others as well? It looked like Parshendi carapace. Dalinar shook his head. The assault began, bridge crews running out ahead of Sadius's army, approaching the tower first.
"Where would you like to make our assault, Father?"
Adolin asked, summoning his shard blade and resting it on his pauldron, sharp side up.
"There," Dalinar said, pointing to a spot on their staging plateau. "Get the men ready."
Adolin nodded, shouting the orders. In the distance, bridgemen began to die.
"Heralds guide your paths, you poor men," Dalinar thought, "as well as my own."
Kaladin danced with the wind. Arrows streamed around him, passing close, nearly kissing him with their painted scragglebark fletching. He had to let them get close, had to make the Parshendi feel they were near to killing him. Despite four other bridgemen drawing their attention, despite the other men of Bridge Four behind, armored with the skeletons of fallen Parshendi, most of the archers focused on Kaladin. He was a symbol, a living banner to destroy. Kaladin spun between arrows, slapping them away with his shield. A storm raged inside him, as if his blood had been sucked away and replaced with storm winds. It made his fingertips tingle with energy. Ahead, the Parshendi sang their angry, chanting song, the song for one who blasphemed against their dead. Kaladin stayed at the front of the decoys, letting the arrows fall close, daring them, taunting them, demanding they kill him until the arrows stopped falling and the wind stilled. Kaladin came to rest, breath held to contain the storm within. The Parshendi reluctantly fell back before Sadius's force. An enormous force, as far as plateau assaults went. Thousands of men and 32 bridges. Despite Kaladin's distraction, 5 bridges had been dropped, the men carrying them slaughtered. None of the soldiers rushing across the chasm had made any specific effort to attack the archers firing on Kaladin, but the weight of numbers had forced them away. A few gave Kaladin loathing gazes, making an odd gesture by cupping a hand to the right ear and pointing at him before finally retreating. Kaladin released his breath, stormlight pulsing away from him. He had to walk a very fine line, drawing in enough stormlight to stay alive, but not so much that it was visible to the watching soldiers. The tower rose ahead of him, a slab of stone that dipped toward the west. The chasm was so wide that he'd worried the men would drop the bridge into the chasm as they tried to place it. On the other side, Sadius had arrayed his forces in a cupping shape, pushing the Parshendi back away, trying to give Dalinar an opening. Perhaps attacking this way served to protect Dalinar's pristine image. He wouldn't make bridgemen die. Not directly, at least. Never mind that he stood on the backs of the men who had fallen to get Sadius across. Their corpses were his true bridge.
"Kaladin!"
a voice called from behind. Kaladin spun. One of his men was wounded.
"Storm it," he thought, dashing up to Bridge Four.
There was enough stormlight still pulsing in his veins to stave off exhaustion. He'd grown complacent. 6 bridge runs without a casualty. He should have realized it couldn't last. He pushed through the collected bridgemen to find Scar on the ground, holding his foot, red blood seeping between his fingers.
"Arrow in the foot,"
Scar said through gritted teeth.
"In the storming foot. Who gets hit in the foot?"
"Kaladin,"
Moash's voice said, urgent. The bridgemen split as Moash brought Teft in, an arrow sprouting from his shoulder between carapace, breastplate, and arm.
"Storm it,"
Kaladin said, helping Moash set Teft down. The older bridgeman looked dazed. The arrow had dug deep into the muscle.
"Somebody get pressure on Scar's foot and wrap it until I can look at it. Teft, can you hear me?"
"I'm sorry, lad,"
Teft mumbled, eyes glassy.
You're all right,"
Kaladin said, hurriedly taking some bandages from Lopin, then nodding grimly. Lopin would heat a knife for cauterizing.
"Who else?"
"Everyone else is accounted for," Dre said. "Teft was trying to hide his wound. He must have taken it when we were shoving the bridge across."
Kaladin pressed gauze against the wound, then gestured for Lopin to hurry with the heated knife.
"I want our scouts watching. Make sure the Parshendi don't try a stunt like they did a few weeks back. If they jump across that plateau to get at Bridge Four, we're dead."
"He's all right,"
Rock said, shading his eyes.
Sadeus is keeping his men in this area. No Parshendi will get through.
The knife came, and Kaladin held it hesitantly, a curl of smoke rising from its length. Teft had lost too much blood. There was no risking a sewing. But with the twist of the knife, Kaladin risked some bad scarring. That could leave the aging bridgeman with a stiffness that would hurt his ability to wield a spear. Reluctantly, Kaladin pressed the knife into the wound, the flesh hissing and blood drying to black crisps. Painspren wiggled out of the ground, sinewy and orange. In a surgery, you could sew, but on the field, this was often the only way. I'm sorry, Teft. He shook his head as he continued to work. Men began to scream. Arrows hit wood and flesh, sounding like distant woodsmen swinging axes. Dalinar waited beside his men, watching Sadeus's soldiers fight. He had better give us an opening, he thought. I'm starting to hunger for this plateau. Fortunately, Sadeus quickly gained his footing on the tower and sent a flanking force over to carve out a section of land for Dalinar. They didn't get entirely into place before Dalinar started moving.
One of you bridges, come with me,
he bellowed, barreling to the forefront. He was followed by one of the 8 bridge teams Sadeus had lent him. Dalinar needed to get onto that plateau. The Parshendi had noticed what was happening and had begun to put pressure on the small company in green and white that Sadeus had sent to defend his entry area.
Bridge crew, there,
Dalinar said, pointing. The bridgemen hustled into place, looking relieved that they wouldn't be asked to place their bridge under fire of arrows. As soon as they got it into position, Dalinar charged across, the kobold guard following. Just ahead, Sadeus's men broke. Dalinar bellowed, closing his gauntleted hands around Oathbringer's hilt as the sword formed from mist. He crashed into the surging Parshendi line with a wide, two-handed sweep that dropped 4 men. The Parshendi began to chant in their strange language, singing their war song. Dalinar kicked a corpse aside and began to attack in earnest, frantically defending the foothold Sadeus's men had gained him. Within minutes, his soldiers surged around him. With the Cobalt Guard watching his back, Dalinar waded into the battle, breaking enemy ranks as only a shardbearer could. He tore pockets through the Parshendi front lines, like a fish leaping from a stream, cutting back and forth, keeping his enemies disorganized. Corpses with burned eyes and slashed clothing made a trail behind him. More and more Alethi troops filled in the holes. Adolin crashed through a group of Parshendi nearby, his own squad of Cobalt Guardsmen a safe distance behind. He brought his whole army across. He needed to ascend quickly, pinning the Parshendi back so they couldn't escape. Sadeus was to watch the northern and western edges of the tower. The rhythm of the battle sang to Dalinar. The Parshendi chanting, the soldiers grunting and yelling, the shard blade in his hands and the surging power of the plate. The thrill rose within him. Since the nausea didn't strike him, he carefully let the blackthorn free, and felt the joy of dominating a battlefield and the disappointment of lacking a worthy foe. Where were the Parshendi shardbearers? He had seen that one in battle weeks ago. Why had he not reappeared? Would they commit so many men to the tower without sending a shardbearer? Something heavy hit his armor, banging off it, causing a small puff of stormlight to escape between the joints along his upper arm. Dalinar cursed, raising an arm to protect his face while scanning the near distance. There, he thought, picking out a nearby rock formation where a group of Parshendi stood swinging enormous rock slings with 2 hands. The head-sized stones crashed into Parshendi and Alethi alike, though Dalinar was obviously the target. He growled as another one hit, smashing against his forearm, sending a soft jolt through the shard plate. The blow was strong enough to send a small array of cracks through his right vambrace. Dalinar growled and threw himself into a plate-enhanced run. The thrill surged more strongly through him, and he rammed his shoulder into a group of Parshendi, scattering them, then spun with his blade and cut down those too slow to get out of his way. He dodged to the side as a hail of stones fell where he'd been standing, then leaped onto a low boulder. He took 2 steps and jumped for the ledge where the rock throwers were standing. He grabbed its edge with 1 hand, holding his blade with the other. The men atop the small ridge stumbled back, but Dalinar heaved himself up just high enough to swing. Oathbringer cut at their legs, and 4 men tumbled to the ground, feet dead. Dalinar dropped the blade, It vanished, and used both hands to heave himself onto the ridge. He landed in a crouch, plate clanking. Several of the remaining Parshendi tried to swing their slings, but Dalinar grabbed a pair of head-sized stones from a pile, easily palming them in his gauntleted hands, and flung them at the Parshendi. The stones hit with enough force to toss the slingmen off the formation, crushing their chests. Dalinar smiled, then began throwing more stones. As the last Parshendi fell off the ledge, Dalinar spun, summoning Oathbringer and looking over the battlefield. A spear wall of blue and reflective steel struggled against black and red Parshendi. Dalinar's men did well, pressing the Parshendi up to the southeast, where they would be trapped. Adolin led this effort, shardplate gleaming. Breathing deeply from the thrill now, Dalinar held his shardblade up above his head, reflecting sunlight. Below, his men cheered, sending up calls that rose above the Parshendi war chant. Glory spren sprouted around him. Stormfather, but it felt good to be winning again. He threw himself off the rock formation, for once not taking the slow and careful way down. He fell amid a group of Parshendi, crashing to the stones, blue stormlight rising from his armor. He spun, slaying, remembering years spent fighting alongside Gavilar. Winning. Conquering. He and Gavilar had created something during those years. A solidified, cohesive nation out of something fractured. Like master potters reconstructing a fine ceramic that had been dropped. With a roar, Dalinar cut through the line of Parshendi to where the Cobalt Guard was fighting to catch up to him.
"We press them,"
he bellowed.
"Pass the word. All companies up the side of the tower."
Soldiers raised spears and runners went to deliver his orders. Dalinar spun and charged into the Parshendi, pushing himself and his army forward. To the north, Sarius's forces were stalled. Well, Dalinar's force would do the work for him. If Dalinar could spear forward here, he could slice the Parshendi in half, then crush the northern side against Sarius and the southern side against the cliff edge. His army surged forward behind him, and the thrill bubbled within. It was power, strength greater than shardplate, vitality greater than youth, skill greater than a lifetime of practice. A fever of power. Parshendi after Parshendi fell before his blade. He couldn't cut their flesh, yet he sheared through their ranks. The momentum of their attacks often carried their corpses stumbling past him even as their eyes burned. The Parshendi started to break, running away or falling back. He grinned behind his near translucent visor. This was life. This was control. Gavilar had been the leader, the momentum, and the essence of their conquest. But Dalinar had been the warrior. Their opponents had surrendered to Gavilar's rule, but the Blackthorn, he was the man who had scattered them, the one who had dueled their leaders and slain their best shardbearers. Dalinar screamed at the Parshendi, and their entire line bent, then shattered. The Alethi surged forward, cheering. Dalinar joined his men, charging at their forefront to run down the fleeing Parshendi war pairs as they fled to the north or south, trying to join larger groups who held there. He reached a pair. One turned to hold him off with a hammer, but Dalinar cut him down in passing, then grabbed the other Parshendi and threw him down with a twist of the arm. Grinning, Dalinar raised his blade high over his head, looming over the soldier. The Parshendi rolled awkwardly, holding his arm, no doubt shattered as he was thrown down. He looked up at Dalinar, terrified, fear spren appearing around him. He was only a youth. Dalinar froze, blade held above his head, muscles taut. Those eyes, that face. Parshendi might not be human, but their features, their expressions were the same. Save for the marbled skin and the strange growths of carapace armor, this boy could have been a groom in Dalinar's stable. What did he see above him? A faceless monster in impervious armor? What was this youth's story? He would only have been a boy when Gavilar had been assassinated. Dalinar stumbled backward, the thrill vanishing. One of the Cobalt Guardsmen passed by, casually ramming a sword into the Parshendi boy's neck. Dalinar raised a hand, but it was over too quickly for him to stop. The soldier didn't notice Dalinar's gesture. Dalinar lowered his hand. His men were rushing around him, rolling over the fleeing Parshendi. The majority of the Parshendi still fought, resisting Sadeus on one side and Dalinar's force on the other. The eastern plateau edge was just a short distance to Dalinar's right. He had come up against the Parshendi force like a spear, slicing it through the center, splitting it off to the north and south. Around him lay the dead. Many of them had fallen face down, taken in the back by spears or arrows from Dalinar's forces. Some Parshendi were still alive, though dying. They hummed or whispered to themselves a strange, haunting song, the one they sang as they waited to die. Their whispered songs rose like the curses of spirits on Soul's March. Dalinar had always found the death song the most beautiful of all he had heard from the Parshendi. It seemed to cut through the grunts, clangs, and screams of the nearby battle. As always, each Parshendi's song was in perfect time with that of his fellows. It was as if they could all hear the same melody somewhere far away, singing along through sputtering, bloodied lips with rasping breath. The codes, Dalinar thought, turning toward his fighting men. Never ask of your men a sacrifice you wouldn't make yourself. Never make them fight in conditions you would refuse to fight in yourself. Never ask a man to perform an act you wouldn't soil your own hands doing. He felt sick. This wasn't beautiful. This wasn't glorious. This wasn't strength, power, or life. This was revolting, repellent, and ghastly. But they killed Gavilar, he thought, searching for a way to overcome the sickness he suddenly felt. Unite them. Roshar had been united once. Had that included the Parshendi? You don't know if you can trust the visions or not, he told himself, his honor guard forming up behind him. They could be from the Night Watcher, or the Voidbringers, or something else entirely. In that moment, the objections felt weak. What had the visions wanted him to do? Bring peace to Alethkar, unite his people, act with justice and honor. Could he not judge the visions based on those results? He raised his shard blade to his shoulder, walking solemnly among the fallen toward the northern line, where the Parshendi were trapped between his men and Sadeus's. His sickness grew stronger. What was happening to him?
Father!
Adolin's shout was frantic. Dalinar turned toward his son, who was running to him. The young man's plate was sprayed with Parshendi blood, but as always his blade gleamed.
What do we do?
Adolin asked, panting.
About what? Dalinar asked.
Adolin turned, pointing to the west, toward the plateau south of the one from which Dalinar's army had begun their assault over an hour ago. There, leaping across the wide chasm, was an enormous second army of Parshendi. Dalinar slammed his visor up, fresh air washing across his sweaty face. He stepped forward. He'd anticipated this possibility, but someone should have given warning. Where were the scouts? What was... He felt a chill. Shaking, he scrambled toward one of the smooth, bulging formations of rock that were plentiful on the tower.
Father?
Adolin said, running after him. Dalinar climbed, seeking the top of the formation, dropping his shard blade. He crested the rise and stood looking northward over his troops and the Parshendi. Northward, toward Sadeus. Adolin climbed up beside him, gauntleted hand slapping up his visor.
Oh, no,
he whispered. Sadeus's army was retreating across the chasm to the northern staging plateau. Half of it was across already. The eight groups of bridgemen he'd lent Dalinar had pulled back and were gone. Sadeus was abandoning Dalinar and his troops, leaving them surrounded on three sides by Parshendi, alone on the shattered plains. And he was taking all of his bridges with him. Sixty-six. Codes.
That chanting, that singing, those rasping voices.
Katak, 1173, 16 seconds pre-death. A middle-aged potter. Reported seeing strange dreams during high storms during the last 2 years. Kaladin wearily unwrapped Scar's wound to inspect his stitches and change the bandage. The arrow had hit on the right side of the ankle, deflecting off the knob of the fibula and scraping down through the muscles on the side of the foot.
You're very lucky, Scar, Kaladin said, putting on the new bandage. You'll walk on this again, assuming you do not put weight on it until it's healed. We'll have some of the men carry you back to camp.
Behind them, the screaming, pounding, pulsing battle raged on. The fighting was distant now, focused on the eastern edge of the plateau. To Kaladin's right, Teft drank as Lopin poured water into his mouth. The older man scowled, taking the water skin from Lopin with his good hand.
I'm not an invalid, he snapped.
He'd gotten over his initial dizziness, though he was weak. Kaladin sat back, feeling drained. When Stormlight faded away, it left him exhausted. That should pass soon. It had been over an hour since the initial assault. He carried a few more infused spheres in his pouch. He forced himself to resist the urge to suck in their light. He stood up, meaning to gather some men to carry Scar and Teft toward the far side of the plateau, just in case the battle went poorly and they had to retreat. That wasn't likely. The Alethi soldiers had been doing well the last time he'd checked. He scanned the battlefield again. What he saw made him freeze. Sadeus was retreating. At first it seemed so impossible that Kaladin couldn't accept it. Was Sadeus bringing his men around to attack in another direction? But no, the rear guard was already across the bridges, and Sadeus's banner was approaching. Was the High Prince wounded?
Dre, Layton, grab Scar. Rock and Pete, you take Teft. Hustle to the western side of the plateau in preparation to flee. The rest of you, get into bridge positions.
The men, only now noticing what was going on, responded with anxiety.
Moash, you're with me,
Kaladin said, hastening toward their bridge. Moash hurried up beside Kaladin.
What's going on?
Sadeus is pulling out, Kaladin said,
watching the tide of Sadeus's men in green slide away from the Parshendi lines like wax melting.
There's no reason to. The battle's barely begun, and his forces are winning. I can only think that Sadeus must have been wounded.
Why would they withdraw the entire army for that? Moash said.
You don't think he is... His banner still flies, Kaladin said. So he's probably not dead, unless they left it up to keep the men from panicking.
He and Moash reached the side of the bridge. Behind, the rest of the crew hastened to form a line. Matal was on the other side of the chasm, speaking with the commander of the rear guard. After a quick exchange, Matal crossed and began to run down the line of bridge crews, calling for them to prepare to carry. He glanced at Kaladin's team, but saw they were already ready, and so hurried on. To Kaladin's right, on the adjacent plateau, the one where Dalinar had launched his assault, the 8 Lent bridge crews pulled away from the battlefield, crossing over to Kaladin's plateau. A light-eyed officer Kaladin didn't recognize was giving them orders. Beyond them, farther to the southwest, a new Parshendi force had arrived and was pouring onto the tower. Sadeus rode up to the chasm. The paint on his shard plate gleamed in the sun. It didn't bear a single scratch. In fact, his entire honor guard was unharmed. Though they had gone over to the tower, they had disengaged the enemy and come back. Why? And then Kaladin saw it. Dalinar Kolin's force, fighting on the upper middle slope of the wedge, was now surrounded. This new Parshendi force was flooding into sections that Sadeus had held, supposedly protecting Dalinar's retreat.
They're abandoning him, Kaladin said. This was a trap, a setup. Sadeus is leaving High Prince Kolin, and all of his soldiers, to die.
Kaladin scrambled around the edge of the bridge, pushing through the soldiers who were coming off it. Moash cursed and followed. Kaladin wasn't certain why he elbowed his way up to the next bridge, Bridge 10, where Sadeus was crossing. Perhaps he needed to see for certain that Sadeus wasn't wounded. Perhaps he was still stunned. This was treachery on a grand scale. Terrible enough that it made Amaram's betrayal of Kaladin seem almost trivial. Sadeus trotted his horse across the bridge, the wood clattering. He was accompanied by 2 light-eyed men in regular armor, and all 3 had their helms under their arms as if they were on parade. The honor guard stopped Kaladin, looking hostile. He was still close enough to see that Satius was, indeed, completely unharmed. He was also close enough to study Satius's proud face as he turned his horse and looked back at the tower. The second Parshendi army swarmed Kolin's army, trapping them. Even without that, Kolin had no bridges. He could not retreat.
"I told you, old friend," Satius said, voice soft but distinct, overlapping the distant screams. "I said that honor of yours would get you killed some day."
He shook his head. Then he turned his horse, trotting it away from the battlefield. Dalinar cut down a Parshendi war pair. There was always another to replace it. He set his jaw, falling into wind stance, and taking the defensive, holding his little rise in the hillside and acting as a rock over which the oncoming Parshendi wave would have to break. Satius had planned this retreat well. His men hadn't been having trouble. They'd been ordered to fight in a way that they could easily disengage. And he had a full 40 bridges to retreat across. Together, that made his abandonment of Dalinar happen quickly by the scale of battles. Though Dalinar had immediately ordered his men to push forward, hoping to catch Satius while the bridges were still set, he hadn't been nearly quick enough. Satius's bridges were pulling away, the entirety of his army now across. Adolin fought nearby. They were two tired men in plate, facing an entire army. Their armor had accumulated a frightening number of cracks. None were critical yet, but they did leak precious stormlight. Wisps of it rose like the songs of dying Parshendi.
"I warned you not to trust him,"
Adolin bellowed as he fought, cutting down a pair of Parshendi, then taking a wave of arrows from a team of archers who had set up nearby. The arrows sprayed against Adolin's armor, scratching the paint. One caught in a crack, widening it.
"I told you,"
Adolin continued to yell, lowering his arm from his face and slicing into the next pair of Parshendi just before they landed their hammers on him.
"I said he was an eel."
"I know,"
Dalinar yelled back.
"We walked right into this,"
Adolin continued, shouting as if he hadn't heard Dalinar.
"We let him take away our bridges. We let him get us onto the plateau before the second wave of Parshendi arrived. We let him control the scouts. We even suggested the attack pattern that would leave us surrounded if he didn't support us."
"I know."
Dalinar's heart twisted inside of him. Satius was carrying out a premeditated, carefully planned, and very thorough betrayal. Satius hadn't been overwhelmed, hadn't retreated for safety, though that was undoubtedly what he would claim when he got back to camp. A disaster, he'd say. Parshendi everywhere. Attacking together had upset the balance, and, unfortunately, he'd been forced to pull out and leave his friend. Oh, perhaps some of Satius's men would talk, tell the truth, and other high princes would undoubtedly know what really happened. But nobody would challenge Satius openly, not after such a decisive and powerful maneuver. The people in the war camps would go along with it. The other high princes were too displeased with Dalinar to raise a fuss. The only one who might speak up was Elokar, and Satius had his ear. It wrenched Dalinar's heart. Had it all been an act? Could he really have misjudged Satius so completely? What of the investigation clearing Dalinar? What of their plans and reminiscences? All lies?
"I saved your life, Satius."
Dalinar watched Satius's banner retreat across the staging plateau. Among that distant group, a rider who wore crimson shardplate turned and looked back. Satius, watching Dalinar fighting for his life. That figure paused for a moment, then turned around and rode on. The Parshendi were surrounding the forward position where Dalinar and Adolin fought just ahead of the army. They were overwhelming his guard. He jumped down and slew another pair of enemies, but earned another blow to his forearm in the process. The Parshendi swarmed around him, and Dalinar's guard began to buckle.
"Pull away!"
he yelled at Adolin, then began to back toward the army proper. The youth cursed, but did as ordered. Dalinar and Adolin retreated back behind the front line of defense. Dalinar pulled off his cracked helm, panting. He'd been fighting nonstop long enough to get winded. despite his shard plate. He let one of the guardsmen hand him a water skin, and Adolin did the same. Dalinar squirted the warm water into his mouth and across his face. It had the metallic taste of storm water. Adolin lowered his water skin, swishing the water in his mouth. He met Dalinar's eyes, his face haunted and grim. He knew. Just as Dalinar did. Just as the men likely did. There would be no surviving this battle. The Parshendi left no survivors. Dalinar braced himself, waiting for further accusations from Adolin. The boy had been right all along, and whatever the visions were, they had misled Dalinar in at least one respect. Trusting Satius had brought them to doom. Men died just a short distance away, screaming and cursing. Dalinar longed to fight, but he needed to rest himself. Losing a shardbearer because of fatigue would not serve his men.
Well, Dalinar demanded of Adolin, say it. I've led us to destruction. This is my fault, Dalinar said. I should never have risked our house for those foolish dreams.
No, Adolin said. He sounded surprised at himself for saying it.
No, father. It's not your fault.
Dalinar stared at his son. That was not what he'd expected to hear.
What would you have done differently? Adolin asked. Would you stop trying to make something better of Alethkar? Would you become like Satius and the others?
No.
I wouldn't have you become that man, father, regardless of what it would gain us. I wish to the heralds that we hadn't let Satius trick us into this, but I will not blame you for his deceit.
Adolin reached over, gripping Dalinar's plate-covered arm.
You are right to follow the codes. You were right to try to unite Alethkar. And I was a fool for fighting you on it every step along the path. Perhaps if I hadn't spent so much time distracting you, we would have seen this day coming.
Dalinar blinked, dumbfounded. This was Adolin speaking those words? What had changed in the boy? And why did he speak these words now, at the dawn of Dalinar's greatest failure? And yet, as the words hung in the air, Dalinar felt his guilt evaporating, blown away by the screams of the dying. It was a selfish emotion. Would he have had himself change? Yes, he could have been more cautious. He could have been warier of Satius. But would he have given up on the codes? Would he have become the same pitiless killer he'd been as a youth? No. Did it matter that the visions had been wrong about Satius? Was he ashamed of the man that they and the readings from the book had made him become? The final piece fell into place inside of him, the final cornerstone, and he found that he was no longer worried. The confusion was gone. He knew what to do at long last. No more questions, no more uncertainty. He reached up, gripping Adolin's arm.
Thank you.
Adolin nodded curtly. He was still angry, Dalinar could see, but he chose to follow Dalinar, and part of following a leader was supporting him even when the battle turned against them. Then they released one another, and Dalinar turned to the soldiers around them.
It is time for us to fight, he said, voice growing louder. And we do so not because we seek the glory of men, but because the other options are worse. We follow the codes not because they bring gain, but because we loathe the people we would otherwise become. We stand here on this battlefield alone because of who we are.
The members of the Cobalt Guard standing in a ring began to turn, one at a time, looking toward him. Beyond them, reserve soldiers, light-eyed and dark, gathered closer, eyes terrified, but faces resolute.
Death is the end of all men, Dalinar bellowed. What is the measure of him once he is gone? The wealth he accumulated and left for his heirs to squabble over? The glory he obtained only to be passed on to those who slew him? The lofty positions he held through happenstance? No. We fight here because we understand. The end is the same.
It is the path that separates men. When we taste that end, we will do so with our heads held high, eyes to the sun.
He held out a hand, summoning Oathbringer.
I am not ashamed of what I have become,
he shouted, and found it to be true. It felt so strange to be free of guilt.
Other men may debase themselves to destroy me. Let them have their glory, for I will retain mine.
The shard blade formed, dropping into his hand. The men did not cheer, but they did stand taller, straight-backed. A little of the terror retreated. Adolin shoved his helm on, his own blade appearing in his hand, coated in condensation. He nodded. Together they charged back into the battle.
And so I die,
Dalinar thought, crashing into the Parshendi ranks. There he found peace, an unexpected emotion on the field of battle, but all the more welcome for that. He did, however, discover one regret. He was leaving poor Renarin as Colin High Prince, in over his head and surrounded by enemies grown fat on the flesh of his father and brother.
I never did deliver that shard plate I promised him,
Dalinar thought.
He will have to make his way without it. Honor of our ancestors protect you, son. Stay strong, and learn wisdom more quickly than your father did. Farewell.
Sixty-seven. Words.
Let me no longer hurt. Let me no longer weep. Dagonarthus, the Black Fisher holds my sorrow and consumes it.
Tanatesak, 1173, 28 seconds pre-death. A dark-eyed female street juggler. Note similarity to sample 1172-89. Bridge 4 lagged behind the rest of the army. With two wounded and four men needed to carry them, the bridge weighed them down. Fortunately, Sadius had brought all 40 bridge crews on this run, including 8 to lend to Dalinar. That meant the army didn't need to wait for Kaladin's team in order to cross. Exhaustion saturated Kaladin, and the bridge on his shoulders seemed made of stone. He hadn't felt so tired since his first days as a bridgeman. Syl hovered in front of him, watching with concern as he marched at the head of his men, sweat drenching the sides of his face, struggling over the uneven ground of the plateau. Ahead, the last of Sadius's army was bunched along the chasm, crossing. The staging plateau was nearly empty. The sheer, awful audacity of what Sadius had done twisted at Kaladin's insides. He thought what had been done to him had been horrible. But here, Sadius callously condemned thousands of men, light-eyed and dark. Supposed allies. That betrayal seemed to weigh as heavy on Kaladin as the bridge itself. It pressed on him, made him gasp for breath. Was there no hope for men? They killed those they should have loved. What good was it to fight? What good was it to win, if there was no difference between ally and enemy? What was victory? Meaningless. What did the deaths of Kaladin's friends and colleagues mean? Nothing. The entire world was a pustule, sickeningly green and infested with corruption. Numb, Kaladin and the others reached the chasm, though they were too late to help with the transfer. The men he'd sent ahead were there, Teft looking grim, Scar leaning on a spear to support his wounded leg. A small group of dead spearmen lay nearby. Sadius's soldiers retrieved their wounded when possible, but some died as they were helped along. They'd abandoned some of those here. Sadius was obviously in a hurry to leave the scene. The dead had been left with their equipment. Scar had probably gotten his crutch there. Some poor bridge crew would have to cross all the way back here at a later date to salvage from these and from Dalinar's fallen. They set their bridge down and Kaladin wiped his brow.
Don't place the bridge across the chasm, he told the men. We'll wait until the last of the soldiers have crossed, then carry it over on one of the other bridges.
Matal eyed Kaladin and his team, but didn't order them to set their bridge. He realized that by the time they got into position, they'd have to pull it up again.
"Isn't that a sight?" Moash said, stepping up beside Kaladin, looking back.
Kaladin turned. The tower rose behind them, slope pointed toward them. Colin's army was a circle of blue, trapped in the middle of the slope after trying to push down and get to Satius before he left. The Parshendi were a dark swarm with specks of red from their marbled skins. They pressed at the Alethi ring, compressing it.
"Such a shame," Drahi said from beside their bridge, sitting on its lip. "Makes me sick."
Other bridgemen nodded, and Kaladin was surprised to see the concern in their faces. Rock and Teft joined Kaladin and Moash, all wearing their Parshendi carapace armor. He was glad they'd left Shen back in the camp. He'd have been catatonic at the sight of it all. Teft cradled his wounded arm. Rock raised a hand to shade his eyes and shook his head, looking eastward.
"It's a shame. A shame to Satius. A shame to us."
"Bridge four," Matal called. "Come on."
Matal was waving for them to cross Bridge six's bridge and leave the staging plateau. An idea came to Kaladin suddenly, a fantastic idea, like a blooming rock bud in his mind.
"We'll follow with our own bridge, Matal," Kaladin called. "We only just got to the chasm. We need to sit for a few minutes."
"Cross now," Matal yelled.
"We'll just fall further behind," Kaladin retorted. "You want to explain to Satius why he has to hold the entire army for one miserable bridge crew? We've got our bridge. Let my men rest. We'll catch up to you later."
"And if those savages come after you?" Matal demanded.
Kaladin shrugged. Matal blinked, then seemed to realize how badly he wanted that to happen.
"Suit yourself,"
he called, rushing across Bridge Six as the other bridges were pulled up. In seconds, Kaladin's team was alone beside the chasm, the army retreating westward. Kaladin smiled broadly.
"I can't believe it. After all that worrying. Men, we're free."
The others turned to him, confused.
"We'll follow in a short while," Kaladin said eagerly, "and Matal will assume we're coming. We'll fall farther and farther behind the army until we're out of sight. Then we'll turn north, use the bridge to cross the plains. We can escape northward, and everyone will just assume the Parshendi caught us and slaughtered us."
The other bridgemen regarded him with wide eyes.
"Supplies," Teft said.
"We have these spheres," Kaladin said, pulling out his pouch. "A wealth of them, right here. We can take the armor and weapons from the dead over there and use those to defend ourselves from bandits. It will be hard, but we won't be chased."
The men were starting to grow excited. However, something gave Kaladin pause. "What of the wounded bridgemen back in the camp?"
"I'll have to stay behind," Kaladin said.
"What?"
Moash demanded.
"Someone will need to," Kaladin said. "For the good of our wounded in our camp. We can't abandon them. And if I stay behind, I can support the story. Wound me and leave me on one of the plateaus. Satius is sure to send scavengers back. I'll tell them my crew was hunted down in retribution for desecrating the Parshendi corpses, our bridge tossed into the chasm. They'll believe it. They've seen how the Parshendi hate us."
The crew was all standing now, shooting glances at one another. Uncomfortable glances.
"We're not leaving without you," Sigzil said.
Many of the others nodded.
"I'll follow," Kaladin said. "We can't leave those men behind."
"Kaladin, lad,"
Teft began.
"We can talk about me later," Kaladin interrupted. "Maybe I'll go with you, then sneak back into camp later to rescue the wounded. For now, go salvage from those bodies."
They hesitated.
"It's an order, men."
They moved, offering no further complaint, rushing to pilfer from the corpses Satius had abandoned. That left Kaladin alone beside the bridge. He was still unsettled. It wasn't just the wounded back in camp. What was it then? This was a fantastic opportunity, the type he'd have practically killed to get during his years as a slave. The chance to vanish, presumed dead? The bridgemen wouldn't have to fight. They were free. Why then was he so anxious? Kaladin turned to survey his men and was shocked to see someone standing beside him. A woman of translucent white light. It was Syl, as he'd never seen her before. The size of a regular person, hands clasped in front of her, hair and dress streaming to the side in the wind. He'd had no idea she could make herself so large. She stared eastward, her expression horrified, eyes wide and sorrowful. It was the face of a child watching a brutal murder that stole her innocence. Kaladin turned and slowly looked in the direction she was staring. Toward the tower. Toward Dalinar Kholin's desperate army. The sight of them twisted his heart. They fought so hopelessly. Surrounded. Abandoned. Left alone to die. We have a bridge, Kaladin realized. If we could get it set. Most of the Parshendi were focused on the Alethi army, with only a token reserve force down at the base near the chasm. It was a small enough group that perhaps the bridgemen could contain them. But no, that was idiocy. There were thousands of Parshendi soldiers blocking Kholin's path to the chasm. And how would the bridgemen set their bridge, with no archers to support them? Several of the bridgemen returned from their quick scavenge. Rock joined Kaladin, staring eastward, expression becoming grim.
This thing is terrible, he said. Can we not do something to help?
Kaladin shook his head. It would be suicide, Rock. We'd have to run a full assault without any army to support us.
Couldn't we just go back a little of the way? Scar asked. Wait to see if Kholin can cut his way down to us? If he does, then we could set our bridge.
No, Kaladin said. If we stayed out of range, Kholin would assume us to be scouts left by Sadius. We'd have to charge the chasm. Otherwise, he'd never come down to meet us. That made the bridgeman pale. Besides, Kaladin added, if we did somehow save some of those men, they'd talk, and Sadius would know we still live. He'd hunt us down and kill us. By going back, we'd throw away our chance at freedom. The other bridgeman nodded at that. The rest had gathered, carrying weapons. It was time to go. Kaladin tried to squish the feeling of despair inside of him. This Dalinar Kholin was probably just like the others. Like Rishon, like Sadius, like any number of other light eyes. Pretending virtue, but corrupted inside. But he has thousands of dark-eyed soldiers with him, a part of him thought. Men who don't deserve this terrible fate. Men like my old spear crew. We owe them nothing, Kaladin whispered. He thought he could see Dalinar Kholin's banner, flying blue at the front of his army. You got them into this, Kholin. I won't let my men die for you. He turned his back on the tower. Syl still stood beside him, facing eastward. It made his very soul twist in knots to see that look of despair on her face.
Are wind spren attracted to wind? She asked softly. Or do they make it?
I don't know, Kaladin said. Does it matter?
Perhaps not. You see, I've remembered what kind of spren I am.
Is this the time for it, Syl?
I bind things, Kaladin, she said,
turning and meeting his eyes.
I am Honor Spren, spirit of oaths, of promises, and of nobility.
Kaladin could faintly hear the sounds of the battle. Or was that just his mind, searching for something he knew to be there? Could he hear the men dying? Could he see the soldiers running away, scattering, leaving their warlord alone. Everyone else fleeing, Kaladin kneeling over Dalet's body, a yellow and green banner flying alone on the field.
I've been here before,
Kaladin bellowed, turning back toward that blue banner. Dalinar always fought at the front.
What happened last time?
Kaladin yelled.
I've learned. I won't be a fool again.
It seemed to crush him. Sadeus's betrayal, his exhaustion, the deaths of so many. He was there again for a moment, kneeling in Amaram's mobile headquarters, watching the last of his friends being slaughtered, too weak and hurt to save them. He raised a trembling hand to his head, feeling the brand there, wet with sweat.
I owe you nothing, Colin.
And his father's voice seemed to whisper a reply. Somebody has to start, son. Somebody has to step forward and do what is right. Because it is right. If nobody starts, then others cannot follow. Dalinar had come to help Kaladin's men, attacking those archers and saving Bridge Four. The Light Eyes don't care about life, Liren had said. So I must. So we must. So you must. Life before death.
I failed so often. I've been knocked to the ground and trod upon.
Strength before weakness.
This would be death I'd lead my friends to.
Journey before destination.
Death.
And what is right. We have to go back, Kaladin said softly.
Storm it. We have to go back.
He turned to the members of Bridge Four. One by one, they nodded. Men who had been the dregs of the army just months before, men who had once cared for nothing but their own skins, took deep breaths, tossed away thoughts for their own safety, and nodded. They would follow him. Kaladin looked up and sucked in a deep breath. Stormlight rushed into him like a wave, as if he'd put his lips up to a high storm and drawn it into himself.
Bridge up,
he commanded. The members of Bridge Four cheered their agreement, grabbing their bridge and hoisting it high. Kaladin pulled on a shield, grabbing the straps in his hand. Then he turned, raising it high. With a shout, he led his men in a charge back toward that abandoned blue banner. Dalinar's plate leaked stormlight from dozens of small breaks. No major piece had escaped. Light rose above him like steam from a cauldron, lingering as stormlight did, slowly diffusing. The sun beat down upon him, baking him as he fought. He was so tired. It hadn't been long since Sadeus's betrayal, not as time was counted in battles, but Dalinar had pushed himself hard, staying at the very front, fighting side by side with Adolin. His plate had lost much stormlight. It was growing heavier and lent him less power with each swing. Soon it would weigh him down, slowing him so the Parshendi could swarm over him. He'd killed many of them. So many. A frightening number. And he did it without the thrill. He was hollow inside. Better that than pleasure. He hadn't killed nearly enough of them. They focused on Dalinar and Adolin. With Shardbearers on the front line, any breach would soon be patched by a man in gleaming armor and a deadly blade. The Parshendi had to bring him and Adolin down first. They knew it, Dalinar knew it, Adolin knew it. Stories spoke of battlefields where the Shardbearers were the last ones standing, pulled down by their enemies after long heroic fights. Completely unrealistic. If you killed the Shardbearers first, you could take their blades and turn them against the enemy. He swung again, muscles lagging with fatigue. Dying first. It was a good place to be. Ask nothing of them you wouldn't do yourself. Dalinar stumbled on the rocks, his shardplate feeling as heavy as regular armor. He could be satisfied with the way he'd handled his own life, but his men. He had failed them. Thinking of the way he had stupidly led them into a trap, that sickened him. And then there was Navani. Of all the times to finally begin courting her, Dalinar thought. 6 years wasted. A lifetime wasted. And now she'll have to grieve again. That thought made him raise his arms and steady his feet on the stone. He fought off the Parshendi, struggling on. For her. He would not let himself fall while he still had strength. Nearby, Adolin's armor leaked as well. The youth was extending himself more and more to protect his father. There had been no discussion of trying, perhaps, to leap the chasms and flee. With chasms so wide, the chances were slim. But beyond that, they would not abandon their men to die. He and Adolin had lived by the codes. They would die by the codes. Dalinar swung again, staying at Adolin's side, fighting in that just-out-of-reach tandem way of two shard-bearers. Sweat streamed down his face inside his helm, and he shot a final glance toward the disappearing army. It was just barely visible on the horizon. Dalinar's current position gave him a good view down to the west.
Let that man be cursed for. For blood of my fathers. What is that?
A small force was moving across the western plateau, running toward the tower. A solitary bridge crew, carrying their bridge.
It can't be,
Dalinar said, stepping back from the fighting, letting the Cobalt Guard, what was left of them, rush in to defend him. Distrusting his eyes, he pushed his visor up. The rest of Sadius's army was gone, but this single bridge crew remained.
Why? Adolin,
he bellowed, pointing with his shard blade, a surge of hope flooding his limbs. The young man turned, tracing Dalinar's gesture. Adolin froze.
Impossible, he yelled. What kind of trap is that? A foolish one, if it is a trap. We are already dead. But why would he send one back? What purpose? Does it matter?
They hesitated for a moment amid the battle. Both knew the answer.
Assault formations!
Dalinar screamed, turning back to his troops. Stormfather, there were so few of them left. Less than half of his original 8,000.
Form up!
Adolin called.
Get ready to move! We're going to punch through them, men! Gather everything you've got! We've got one chance!
A slim one, Dalinar thought, pulling his visor down. We'll have to cut through the rest of the Parshendi army. Even if they reached the bottom, they'd probably find the crew dead, their bridge cast into the chasm. The Parshendi archers were already forming up. There were hundreds of them. It would be a slaughter. But it was a hope. A tiny, precious hope. If his army was going to fall, it would do so while trying to seize that hope. Raising his shard blade high, feeling a surge of strength and determination, Dalinar charged forward at the head of his men. For the second time in one day, Kaladin ran toward an armed Parshendi position, shield before him, wearing armor cut from the corpse of a fallen enemy. Perhaps he should have felt revolted at what he'd done in creating his armor, but it was no worse than what the Parshendi had done in killing Dunny, Maps, and that nameless man who had shown Kaladin kindness on his first day as a bridgeman. Kaladin still wore that man's sandals.
Us and them, he thought.
That was the only way a soldier could think of it. For today, Dalinar Kholin and his men were part of the us. A group of Parshendi had seen the bridgemen approaching and was setting up with bows. Fortunately, it appeared that Dalinar had seen Kaladin's band as well, for the army in blue was beginning to cut its way toward rescue. It wasn't going to work. There were too many Parshendi, and Dalinar's men would be tired. It was another disaster. But for once, Kaladin charged into it with eyes wide open.
This is my choice, he thought,
as the Parshendi archers formed up. It's not some angry god watching me, not some Spren playing tricks, not some twist of fate. It's me. I chose to follow Tien. I chose to charge the Shardbearer and save Amaram. I chose to escape the slave pits. And now I choose to try to rescue these men, though I know I will probably fail. The Parshendi loosed their arrows, and Kaladin felt an exultation. Tiredness evaporated. Fatigue fled. He wasn't fighting for Sadeas. He wasn't working to line someone's pockets. He was fighting to protect. The arrows zipped at him, and he swung his shield in an arc, spraying them away. Others came, shooting this way and that, seeking his flesh. He stayed just ahead of them, leaping as they shot for his thighs, turning as they shot for his shoulders, raising his shield when they shot for his face. It wasn't easy, and more than a few arrows got close to him, scoring his breastplate or shin guards. But none hit. He was doing it. He was... Something was wrong. He spun between two arrows, confused.
Kaladin,
Syl said, hovering nearby, back to her smaller form.
There.
She pointed toward the other staging plateau, the one nearby that Dalinar had used for his assault. A large contingent of Parshendi had jumped across to that plateau and were kneeling down raising bows, pointed not at him, but right at Bridge Four's unshielded flank.
No!
Kaladin screamed, stormlight escaping from his mouth in a cloud. He turned and ran back across the rocky plateau toward the bridge crew. Arrows launched at him from behind. One took his backplate square on, but skidded aside. Another hit his helm. He leaped over a rocky rift, dashing with all the speed his stormlight could lend him. The Parshendi at the side were drawing. There were at least 50 of them. He was going to be too late. He was going to...
Bridge Four,
he bellowed.
Side carry right.
They hadn't practiced that maneuver in months, but their training was manifest as they obeyed without question, dropping the bridge to their sides just as the archers released. The flight of arrows hit the bridge's deck, bristling across the wood. Kaladin let out a relieved breath, reaching the bridge team who had slowed to carry the bridge on the side.
Kaladin,
Rock said, pointing. Kaladin spun. The archers behind, on the tower, were drawing for a large volley. The bridge crew was exposed. The archers loosed. He yelled again, screaming out, stormlight infusing the air around him as he threw every bit of it he had into his shield. The scream echoed in his ears. The stormlight burst from him, his clothing freezing and cracking. Arrows darkened the sky. Something hit him. An extended impact that tossed him backward into the bridgeman. He hit hard, grunting as the force continued to push upon him. The bridge ground to a halt, the men stopping. All fell still. Kaladin blinked, feeling completely drained. His body hurt, his arms tingled, his back ached. There was a sharp pain in his wrist. He groaned, opening his eyes, stumbling as Rock's hands caught him from behind. A muted thump, the bridge being set down. Idiots, Kaladin thought. Don't set it down. Retreat. The bridgemen crowded around him as he slipped to the ground, overwhelmed by having expended too much stormlight. He blinked at what he held before him, attached to his bleeding arm. His shield was covered in arrows. Dozens of them, some splitting the others. The bones crossing the shield's front had shattered. The wood was in splinters. Some of the arrows had gone through and hit his forearm. That was the pain. Over 100 arrows, an entire volley, pulled into a single shield.
By the bright caller's rays, Drey said softly. What was...
It was like a fountain of light, Moash said, kneeling beside Kaladin.
Like the sun itself burst from you, Kaladin. The Parshendi,
Kaladin croaked and let go of the shield. The straps were broken, and as he struggled to stand, the shield all but disintegrated, falling to pieces scattering dozens of broken arrows at his feet. A few remained stuck in his arm, but he ignored the pain, looking across at the Parshendi. The groups of archers on both plateaus froze in stunned postures. The ones in front began to call to one another in a language Kaladin didn't understand.
Neshua Kadal!
They stood up. And then they fled.
What?
Kaladin said.
I don't know,
Teft said, cradling his own wounded arm.
But we're getting you to safety. Blast this arm. Lopen!
The shorter man brought Dabbid, and they ushered Kaladin away to a more secure location at the center of the platform. He held his arm, numb, his exhaustion so deep that he could barely think.
Bridge up, Moash called. We've still got a job to do.
The rest of the bridgemen grimly ran back to their bridge, hoisting it up. On the tower, Dalinar's force was fighting its way through the Parshendi toward the possible safety of the bridge crew.
They must be taking such heavy losses, Kaladin thought numbly.
He stumbled and fell to the ground. Teft and Lopen pulled Kaladin into a sheltered hollow, joining Scar and Dabbid. Scar's foot bandage reddened with seeping blood, the spear he'd been using as a staff resting beside him.
Thought I told him to stay off that foot.
We need spheres, Teft said. Scar?
He asked for them this morning, the lean man said. Gave him everything I had. I think most of the men did the same.
Teft cursed softly, pulling the remaining arrows from Kaladin's arm, then wrapping it with bandages.
Is he going to be all right? Scar asked.
I don't know, Teft said. I don't know anything. Kalek, I'm an idiot. Kaladin, lad, can you hear me?
It's just shock, Kaladin said.
You're looking strange, Goncho, Lopen said nervously. White.
Your skin is ashen, lad, Teft said. It looks like you did something to yourself back there. I don't know, I...
He cursed again, smacking his hand against the stone.
I should have listened, idiot.
They'd laid him on his side, and he could barely see the tower. New groups of Parshendi, ones who hadn't seen Kaladin's display, were making for the chasm, bearing weapons. Bridge Four arrived and set down their bridge. They unstrapped their shields and hurriedly retrieved spears from the sacks of salvage tied at the bridge's side. Then the men went to their positions, pushing at the sides, preparing to slide the bridge across the gap. The Parshendi teams didn't have bows. They formed up to wait, weapons out. There were easily three times as many as there were bridgemen, and more were coming.
We've got to go help, Scar said to Lopen and Teft.
The other two nodded, and all three, two wounded and one missing an arm, climbed to their feet. Kaladin tried to do likewise, but he fell back down, legs too weak to hold him.
Stay, lad, Teft said, smiling. We'll handle it just fine.
They gathered some spears from a stock Lopen had put in his litter, then hobbled out to join the bridge crew. Even Dabbid joined them. He hadn't spoken since being wounded on that first bridge run so long ago. Kaladin crawled up to the lip of the depression, watching them. Syl landed on the stone beside him.
Storming fools, Kaladin muttered. Shouldn't have followed me. Proud of them anyway.
Kaladin?
Syl said.
Is there anything you can do?
He was so storming tired.
Something to make me stronger?
She shook her head. A short distance ahead, the bridgemen began to push. The bridge's wood scraped loudly as it crossed the rocks, moving out over the chasm toward the waiting Parshendi. They began singing that harsh battle song, the one they did whenever they saw Kaladin in his armor. The Parshendi looked eager, angry, deadly. They wanted blood. They would cut into the bridgemen and rip them apart, then drop the bridge and their corpses into the void beneath.
It's happening again, Kaladin thought, dazed and overwhelmed.
He found himself curling up, drained and shaken.
I can't get to them. They'll die. Right before me. Tux. Dead. Nelda. Dead. Goshal. Dead. Dalit. Sen. Maps. Dunny. Dead. 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 Tien. Dead.
Lying huddled in a hollow in the rock, the sounds of battle ringing in the distance, death surrounding him. In a moment he was there again, on that most horrible of days. Kaladin stumbled through the cursing, screaming, fighting chaos of war, clinging to his spear. He'd dropped his shield. He needed to find a shield somewhere. Shouldn't he have a shield? It was his third real battle. He'd been in Amaram's army only a few months, but already Hearthstone seemed a world away. He reached a hollow of rock and crouched down, pushing his back to it, breathing in and out, fingers slick on the spear's shaft. He was shaking. He'd never realized how idyllic his life had been. Away from war. Away from death. Away from those screams, the cacophony of metal on metal, metal on wood, metal on flesh. He squeezed his eyes shut, trying to block it out. No, he thought. Open your eyes. Don't let them find you and kill you that easily. He forced his eyes open, then turned and peeked out over the battlefield. It was a complete mess. They fought on a large hillside, thousands of men on either side, intermixing and killing. How could anyone keep track of anything in this insanity? Amaram's army, Kaladin's army, was trying to hold the hilltop. Another army, also a Lethi, was trying to take it from them. That was all Kaladin knew. The enemy seemed more numerous than his own army. He'll be safe, Kaladin thought. He will be. But he had trouble convincing himself. Tien's stint as a messenger boy hadn't lasted long. Recruitment was down, he'd been told, and every hand that could hold a spear was needed. Tien and the other older messenger boys had been organized into several squads of deep reserves. Dalar said those wouldn't ever be used. Probably. Unless the army was in serious danger. Did being surrounded atop a steep hill, their lines in chaos, constitute serious danger? Get to the top, he thought, looking up the incline. Amaram's banner still flew up there. Their soldiers must be holding. All Kaladin could see was a churning mess of men in orange and the occasional bit of forest green. Kaladin took off at a run up the side of the hill. He didn't turn as men shouted at him, didn't check to see which side they were from. Patches of grass pulled down in front of him. He stumbled over a few corpses, dashed around a couple of scraggly stump-weight trees, and avoided places where men were fighting. There, he thought, noting a group of spearmen ahead, standing in a line, watching warily. Green. Amaram's colors. Kaladin scrambled up to them, and the soldiers let him pass.
Which squad are you from, soldier?
Said a stocky, light-eyed man with the knots of a low captain.
Dead, sir, Kaladin forced out. All dead. We were in Bright Lord Tashlin's company and—
Bah, the man said, turning to a runner. Third report we've had that Tashlin is down. Somebody warn Amaram. East side is weakening by degrees.
He looked to Kaladin.
You, off to the reserves for reassignment.
Yes, sir,
Kaladin said, numb. He glanced down the way he'd come. The incline was littered with corpses, many of them in green. Even as he watched, a group of three stragglers rushing from the top was intercepted and slaughtered. None of the men at the top moved to help them. Kaladin could have fallen just as easily, within yards of safety. He knew that it was probably important, strategically, that these soldiers in the line maintain their positions. But it seemed so heartless.
Find Tien, he thought, trotting off toward the reserves field on the north side of the wide hilltop.
Here, however, he found only more chaos. Groups of dazed men, bloodied, getting sorted into new squads and sent back out onto the field. Kaladin moved through them, searching for the squad that had been created out of the messenger boys. He found Dalar first. The lanky three-fingered sergeant of the reserves stood beside a tall post bearing a pair of flapping triangular banners. He was assigning newly made squads to fill out losses in the companies fighting below. Kaladin could still hear the yells.
"You," Dalar said, pointing at Kaladin.
"Squad reassignment is in that direction. Get moving."
"I need to find the squad made from messenger boys," Kaladin said.
"Why in damnation do you want to know that?"
"How should I know?" Kaladin said, shrugging, trying to remain calm.
"I just follow orders."
Dalar grunted.
"Brightlord Sheeler's company, southeast side. You can—"
Kaladin was already running. This wasn't supposed to happen. Tien was supposed to stay safe. Stormfather. It hadn't even been 4 months yet. He made his way to the southeast side of the hill and searched out a banner flapping a quarter of the way down the incline. The stark black glyph pair read Shesh Laryl, Sheeler's company. Surprised at his own determination, Kaladin brushed past the soldiers guarding the hilltop and found himself on the battlefield again. Things looked better over here. Sheeler's company was holding its ground, although assaulted by a wave of enemies. Kaladin dashed down the incline, skidding in places, sliding on blood. His fear had vanished. It had been replaced by worry for his brother. He arrived at the company line just as enemy squads were assaulting. He tried to scramble further behind the lines to search for Tien, but he was caught in the wave of attacks. He stumbled to the side, joining a squad of spearmen. The enemy was on them in a second. Kaladin held his spear in two hands, standing at the edge of the other spearmen and trying not to get in their way. He didn't really know what he was doing. He'd barely knew enough to use his shield mate for protection. The exchange happened quickly, and Kaladin made only a single thrust. The enemy was rebuffed, and he managed to avoid taking a wound. He stood, panting, gripping his spear.
"You,"
an authoritative voice said. A man was pointing at Kaladin, knots on his shoulders. The squad leader.
"About time my team got some of those reinforcements. For a time there, I thought Varth was going to get every man. Where's your shield?"
Kaladin scrambled to grab one off a fallen soldier nearby. As he was working, the squad leader swore behind him.
"Damnation. They're coming again. Two prongs this time. We can't hold like this."
A man in a green messenger's vest scrambled over a nearby rock formation.
"Hold against the east assault, Mesh."
"What about that wave to the south?"
the squad leader, Mesh, bellowed.
"It's handled for now. Hold east. Those are your orders."
The messenger scrambled on, delivering a similar message to the next squad in line.
"Varth, your squad is to hold east."
Kaladin got up with his shield. He needed to go find Tien. He couldn't... He stumbled to a stop. There, in the next squad down the line, stood three figures. Younger boys, looking small in their armor and holding their spears uncertainly. One was Tien. His team of reserves had obviously been split apart to fill holes in other squads.
"Tien!"
Kaladin screamed, falling out of line as the enemy troops came upon them. Why were Tien and the other two positioned in the middle front of the squad formation? They barely knew how to hold a spear. Mesh yelled for Kaladin, but Kaladin ignored him. The enemy was upon them in a moment, and Mesh's squad broke, losing their discipline and turning to a more frenzied, unorganized resistance. Kaladin felt something, like a thump against his leg. He stumbled, hitting the ground, and realized with a shock that he'd been stabbed with a spear. He felt no pain. Odd. "Tien," he thought, forcing himself up. Someone loomed over him, and Kaladin reacted immediately, rolling as a spear came down for his heart. His own spear was back in his hands before he realized he'd grabbed it, and he whipped it upward. Then he froze. He'd just driven his spear through the enemy soldier's neck. It had happened so quickly. "I just killed a man." He rolled over, letting the enemy drop to his knees as Kaladin yanked his spear free. Barth's squad was back a little farther. The enemy hit it a little bit after attacking where Kaladin had been. Tien and the other two were still in the front.
"Tien!"
Kaladin yelled. The boy looked toward him, eyes opening wide. He actually smiled. Behind him, the rest of the squad pulled back, leaving the three untrained boys exposed. And, sensing weakness, the enemy soldiers descended on Tien and the others. There was an armored light eyes at their front and gleaming steel. He swung a sword. Kaladin's brother fell just like that. One eye blink and he was standing there looking terrified. The next he was on the ground.
No!
Kaladin screamed. He tried to get to his feet, but slipped to his knees. His leg didn't work right. Barth's squad hurried forward, attacking the enemies, who had been distracted with Tien and the other two. They'd placed the untrained at the front to stop the momentum of the enemy attack.
No, no, no!
Kaladin screamed. He used his spear to hoist himself to his feet, then stumbled forward. It couldn't be what he thought. It couldn't be over that quickly. It was a miracle that nobody struck Kaladin down as he stumbled the rest of the distance. He barely thought on it. He just watched where Tien had fallen. There was thunder. No, hooves. Amaram had arrived with his cavalry, and they were sweeping through the enemy lines. Kaladin didn't care. He finally reached the spot. There he found three corpses, young, small, lying in a small hollow in the stone. Horrified, numb, Kaladin put forward his hand and rolled over the one that was face down. Tien's dead eyes stared upward. Kaladin continued to kneel beside the body. He should have bound his wound, should have moved back to safety, but he was too numb. He just knelt.
About time he rode down here, a voice said.
Kaladin looked up, noting a group of spearmen gathering nearby, watching the cavalry.
He wanted them to bunch up against us,
one of the spearmen said. He had knots on the shoulders. Barth, their squad leader. Such keen eyes the man had. Not a brutish lout. Lean. Thoughtful.
I should feel anger, Kaladin thought. I should feel something.
Barth looked down at him, then at the bodies of the three dead messenger boys.
You bastard,
Kaladin hissed.
You put them in front.
You work with what you have,
Barth said, nodding to his team, then pointing at a fortified position.
If they give you men who can't fight, I'll find another use for them.
He hesitated as his team marched away. He seemed regretful.
Gotta do what you can to stay alive, son. Turn a liability into an advantage whenever you can. Remember that, if you live.
With that, he jogged off. Kaladin looked down.
Why couldn't I protect him?
He thought, looking at Tien, remembering his brother's laugh. His innocence, his smile, his excitement at exploring the hills outside Hearthstone.
Please, please let me protect him. Make me strong enough.
He felt so weak. Blood loss. He found himself slumping to the side, and with tired hands he tied off his wound. And then, feeling terribly vacant inside, he lay down beside Tien and pulled the body close.
Don't worry,
Kaladin whispered. When had he started to cry?
I'll bring you home. I'll protect you, Tien. I'll bring you back.
He held the body into the evening, long past the end of the battle, clinging to it as it slowly grew cold. Kaladin blinked. He wasn't in that hollow with Tien. He was on the plateau. He could hear men dying in the distance. He hated thinking of that day. He almost wished he'd never gone looking for Tien. Then he wouldn't have had to watch, wouldn't have had to kneel there, powerless as his brother was slaughtered. It was happening again. Rock, Moash, Teft. They were all going to die. And here he lay, powerless again. He could barely move. He felt so drained.
Kaladin?
a voice whispered. He blinked. Syl was hovering in front of him.
Do you know the words?
All I wanted to do was protect them,
he whispered.
That's why I've come. The words, Kaladin.
They're going to die. I can't save them.
Amaram slaughtered his men in front of him. A nameless shardbearer killed Dalet. A light eyes killed Tien. No. Kaladin rolled over and forced himself to his feet, wavering on weak legs. No. Bridge 4 hadn't set its bridge yet. That surprised him. They were still pushing it across the chasm. The Parshendi crowding up on the other side, eager, their song becoming more frantic. His delusions had seemed like hours, but had passed in just a few heartbeats.
No.
Lopin's litter was in front of Kaladin. A spear rested amid the drained water bottles and ragged bandages, steel head reflecting sunlight. It whispered to him. It terrified him, and he loved it. When the time comes, I hope you're ready, because this lot will need you. He seized the spear, the first real weapon he had held since his display in the chasm so many months ago. Then he started to run. Slowly at first, picking up speed. Reckless, his body exhausted. But he did not stop. He pushed forward, harder, charging toward the bridge. It was only halfway across the chasm. Syl shot out in front of him, looking back, worried.
The words, Kaladin.
Rock cried out as Kaladin ran onto the bridge as it was moving. The wood wobbled beneath him. It was out over the chasm, but hadn't reached the other side.
Kaladin!
Teft yelled.
What are you doing?
Kaladin screamed, reaching the end of the bridge. Finding a tiny surge of strength somewhere, he raised his spear and threw himself off the end of the wooden platform, launching himself into the air above the cavernous void. Bridgman cried out in dismay. Syl zipped about him with worry. Parshendi looked up with amazement as a lone bridgeman sailed through the air toward them. His drained, worn-out body barely had any strength left. In that moment of crystallized time, he looked down on his enemies. Parshendi with their marbled red and black skin. Soldiers raising finely crafted weapons as if to cut him from the sky. Strangers, oddities in carapace breastplates and skullcaps. Many of them wearing beards. Beards woven with glowing gemstones. Kaladin breathed in. Like the power of salvation itself, like rays of sunlight from the eyes of the Almighty, stormlight exploded from those gemstones. It streamed through the air, pulled invisible streams like glowing columns of luminescent smoke, twisting and turning and spiraling like tiny funnel clouds until they slammed into him. And the storm came to life again. Kaladin hit the rocky ledge, legs suddenly strong, mind, body, and blood alive with energy. He fell into a crouch, spear under his arm, a small ring of stormlight expanding from him in a wave, pushed down to the stones by his fall. Stunned, the Parshendi shied away, eyes widening, song faltering. A trickle of stormlight closed the wounds on his arm. He smiled, spear held before him. It was as familiar as the body of a lover long lost.
The words,
a voice said, urgent, as if directly into his mind. In that moment, Kaladin was amazed to realize that he knew them, though they'd never been told to him.
I will protect those who cannot protect themselves, he whispered.
The second ideal of the Knights Radiant. A crack shook the air, like an enormous clap of thunder, though the sky was completely clear. Teft stumbled back, having just set the bridge in place, and found himself gaping with the rest of Bridge 4. Kaladin exploded with energy. A burst of whiteness washed out of him, a wave of white smoke. Stormlight. The force of it slammed into the first rank of Parshendi, tossing them backward, and Teft had to hold his hand up against the vibrancy of the light.
Something just changed, Moash whispered, hand up. Something important.
Kaladin raised his spear. The powerful light began to subside, retreating. A more subdued glow began to steam off his body. Radiant, like smoke from an ethereal fire. Nearby, some of the Parshendi fled, though others stepped up, raising weapons in challenge. Kaladin spun into them, a living form of steel, wood, and determination. Eshonai.
They named it the final desolation, but they lied. Our gods lied. Oh, how they lied. The Everstorm comes. I hear its whispers. See its storm wall. Know its heart.
Tanatahis, 1173. 8 seconds pre-death. An Azish itinerant worker. Sample of particular note. Soldiers in blue yelled, screaming war cries to encourage themselves. The sounds were like a roaring avalanche behind Adolin as he swung his blade in wild swings. There was no room for a proper stance. He had to keep moving, punching through the Parshendi, leading his men toward the western chasm. His father's horse and his own were still safe, carrying some wounded through the back ranks. The Shardbearers didn't dare mount, though. In these close quarters, the Rashadian would be chopped down and their riders dropped. This was the type of battlefield maneuver that would have been impossible without Shardbearers. A rush against superior numbers, made by wounded, exhausted men? They should have been stopped cold and crushed. But Shardbearers could not be stopped so easily. Their armor leaking stormlight, their 6-foot blades flashing in wide swaths, Adolin and Dalinar shattered the Parshendi defenses, creating an opening, a rift. Their men, the best trained in the Alethi war camps, knew how to use it. They formed a wedge behind their Shardbearers, prying the Parshendi armies open, using spearmen formations to cut through and keep going forward. Adolin moved at almost a jog. The incline of the hill worked in their favor, giving them better footing, letting them rumble down the slope like charging chulls. The chance to survive when all had been thought lost gave the men a surge of energy for one last dash toward freedom. They took enormous casualties. Already Dalinar's force had lost another 1,000 of his 4, probably more. But it didn't matter. The Parshendi fought to kill, but the Alethi, this time, fought to live.
Living heralds above, Teft thought, watching Kaladin fight.
Just moments ago, the lad had looked near death, skin a dull gray, hands shaking. Now he was a shining whirlwind, a storm wielding a spear. Teft had known many a battlefield, but he had never seen anything remotely like this. Kaladin held the ground before the bridge by himself. White stormlight streamed from him like a blazing fire. His speed was incredible, nearly inhuman. And his precision? Each thrust of the spear hit a neck, side, or other unarmored target of Parshendi flesh. It was more than the stormlight. Teft had only fragmentary recollections of the things his family had tried to teach him, but those memories all agreed. Stormlight did not grant skill. It could not make a man into something he was not. It enhanced, it strengthened, it invigorated. It perfected. Kaladin ducked low, slamming the butt against the leg of a Parshendi, dropping him to the ground, and came up to block an axe swing by catching the haft with that of his spear. He let go with one hand, sweeping the tip of the spear up under the arm of the Parshendi and ramming it into his armpit. As that Parshendi fell, Kaladin pulled his spear free and slammed the end into a Parshendi head that had gotten too close. The butt of the spear shattered with a spray of wood, and the Parshendi's carapace helm exploded. No. This wasn't just stormlight. This was a master of the spear with his capacity enhanced to astonishing levels. The bridgemen gathered around Teft, amazed. His wounded arm didn't seem to hurt as much as it should.
He's like a part of the wind itself, Drey said. Pulled down and given life. Not a man at all. A spren.
Sigsel? Scar asked, eyes wide. You ever seen anything like this? The dark-skinned man shook his head.
Stormfather, Pete whispered. What is he?
He's our bridge leader,
Teft said, snapping out of his reverie. On the other side of the chasm, Kaladin barely dodged a blow from a Parshendi mace.
And he needs our help. First and second teams, you take the left side. Don't let the Parshendi get around him. Third and fourth teams, you're with me on the right. Rock and Lopin, you'll be ready to pull back any wounded. The rest of you, wrinkled wall formation. Don't attack. Just stay alive and keep them back. And Lopin, toss him a spear that isn't broken.
Dalinar roared, striking down a group of Parshendi swordsmen. He charged over their bodies, running up a short incline and throwing himself in a leap, dropping several feet into the Parshendi below, sweeping out with his blade. His armor was an enormous weight upon his back, but the energy of his struggle kept him going. The Cobalt Guard, the straggling members who were left, roared and leaped off the incline behind him. They were doomed. Those bridgemen would be dead by now. But Dalinar blessed them for their sacrifice. It might have been meaningless as an end, but it had changed the journey. This was how his soldiers should fall. Not cornered and frightened, but fighting with passion. He would not slide quietly into the dark. No, indeed. He shouted his defiance again as he smashed into a group of Parshendi, whirling and hauling his shard blade in a circling sweep. He stumbled through the patch of dead Parshendi, their eyes burning as they fell. And Dalinar burst out onto open stone. He blinked, stunned.
We did it,
he thought in disbelief.
We cut all the way through.
Behind him, soldiers roared, their tired voices sounding nearly as amazed as he felt. Just ahead of him, a final group of Parshendi lay between Dalinar and the chasm, but their backs were turned to him.
Why were they?
The bridgemen. The bridgemen were fighting. Dalinar gaped, lowering Oathbringer with numb arms. That little force of bridgemen held the bridgehead, fighting desperately against the Parshendi who were trying to force them back. It was the most amazing, most glorious thing Dalinar had ever seen. Adolin let out a whoop, breaking through the Parshendi to Dalinar's left. The younger man's armor was scratched, cracked, and scored, and his helm had shattered, leaving his head dangerously exposed. But his face was exultant.
Go! Go!
Dalinar bellowed, pointing.
Give them support, Stormit! If those bridgemen fall, we're all dead.
Adolin and the Cobalt Guard dashed forward. Gallant and Sureblood, Adolin's Rashadium, galloped past, carrying three wounded each. Dalinar hated to leave so many wounded on the slopes, but the codes were clear. In this case, protecting the men he could save was more important. Dalinar turned to strike at the main body of Parshendi to his left, making certain the corridor remained open for his troops. Many of the soldiers scrambled toward safety, though several squads proved their mettle by forming up at the sides to keep fighting, opening the gap wider. Sweat had soaked through the brow rag attached to Dalinar's helm, and drops of it fell, overwhelming his eyebrows and falling into his left eye. He cursed, reaching to open his visor, then froze. The enemy troops were parting. There, standing among them, was a 7-foot-tall giant of a Parshendi in gleaming silver shard plate. It fit as only plate could, having molded to his large stature. His shard blade was wicked and barbed, like flames frozen into metal. He raised it to Dalinar in salute.
Now,
Dalinar bellowed incredulously.
Now you come?
The shardbearer stepped forward, steel boots clanking on stone. The other Parshendi backed away.
Why not earlier?
Dalinar demanded, hurriedly setting himself into wind stance, blinking his left eye against the sweat. He stood near the shadow of a large, oblong rock formation, shaped like a book on its side.
Why wait out the entire battle only to attack now, when
Dalinar was about to get away,
Apparently the Parshendi Shardbearer had been willing to let his fellows throw themselves at Dalinar when it seemed obvious he would fall. Perhaps they let the regular soldiers try to win shards, as was done in human armies. Now that Dalinar might escape, the potential loss of a Platon blade was too great, and so the Shardbearer had been sent to fight him. The Shardbearer stepped up, speaking in the thick Parshendi language. Dalinar didn't understand a word of it. He raised his blade and fell into stance. The Parshendi said something further, then grunted and stepped forward, swinging. Dalinar cursed to himself, still blinded in his left eye. He dodged back, swinging his blade and slapping the enemy's weapon. The parry shook Dalinar inside his armor. His muscles responded sluggishly. Stormlight still leaked from cracks in his armor, but it was abating. It wouldn't be much longer before the plates stopped responding. The Parshendi Shardbearer attacked again. His stance was unfamiliar to Dalinar, but there was something practiced about it. This wasn't a savage playing with a powerful weapon. He was a trained Shardbearer. Dalinar was once again forced to parry, something Windstance wasn't intended to do. His weight-laden muscles were too sluggish to dodge, and his plate was too cracked to risk himself getting hit. The blow nearly threw him out of stance. He clenched his teeth, throwing weight behind his weapon, and intentionally overcorrecting as the Parshendi's next blow came. The blades met with a furious clang, throwing off a shower of sparks like a bucket of molten metal dashed into the air. Dalinar recovered quickly and threw himself forward, trying to slam his shoulder into his enemy's chest. The Parshendi was still full of power, however, his plate uncracked. He got out of the way and quite nearly hit Dalinar on the back. Dalinar twisted just in time. Then he turned and leaped onto a small rock formation, then stepped to a higher ledge and managed to reach the top. The Parshendi followed as Dalinar had hoped. The precarious footing raised the stakes, which was just fine with him. A single blow could ruin Dalinar. That meant taking risks. As the Parshendi neared the top of the formation, Dalinar attacked, using the advantage of surer footing and high ground. The Parshendi didn't bother dodging. He took a hit to the helm, which cracked, but gained a chance to swing at Dalinar's legs. Dalinar leaped backward, feeling painfully sluggish. He barely got out of the way and wasn't able to get in a second strike as the Parshendi climbed atop the formation. The Parshendi man made an aggressive thrust. Setting his jaw, Dalinar raised his forearm to block and stepped into the attack, praying to the heralds that his forearm plate would deflect the blow. The Parshendi blade connected, shattering the plate, sending a shock up Dalinar's arm. The gauntlet on his fist suddenly felt like a lead weight, but Dalinar kept moving, swinging his blade for his own attack. Not at the Parshendi's armor, but at the stone beneath him. Even as the molten shards of Dalinar's forearm plate sprayed in the air, he sheared through the rock shelf under his opponent's feet. The entire section broke free, sending the Shardbearer tumbling backward toward the ground. He hit with a crash. Dalinar slammed his fist, the one with the broken arm guard, into the ground and released the gauntlet. It unlatched and he pulled his hand free into the air, sweat making it feel cold. He left the gauntlet, it wouldn't work properly now that the forearm piece was gone, and roared as he swung his blade single-handed. He sliced through another chunk of rock and sent it falling down toward the Shardbearer. The Parshendi stumbled to his feet, but the rock smashed down on top of him, sending out a splash of stormlight and a deep cracking sound. Dalinar climbed down, trying to get to the Parshendi while he was still. Unfortunately, Dalinar's right leg was dragging, and when he reached the ground, he walked in a limp. If he took the boot off, he wouldn't be able to hold up the rest of the shard plate. He gritted his teeth, stopping as the Parshendi stood up. He'd been too slow. The Parshendi's armor, though cracked in several places, was nowhere near as strained as Dalinar's. Impressively, he'd managed to retain his shard blade. He leveled his armored head at Dalinar, eyes hidden behind the slit in the helm. Around them, the other Parshendi watched silently, forming a ring but not interfering. Dalinar raised his blade, holding it in one gauntleted hand and one bare. The breeze was cold on his clammy, exposed hand. There was no use running. He fought here. For the first time in many, many months, Kaladin felt fully awake and alive. The beauty of the spear whistling in the air, the unity of body and mind, hands and feet reacting instantly, faster than thoughts could be formed, the clarity and familiarity of the old spear forms, learned during the most terrible time in his life. His weapon was an extension of himself. He moved it as easily and instinctively as he did his fingers. Spinning, he cut through the Parshendi, bringing retribution to those who had slaughtered so many of his friends. Repayment for each and every arrow loosed at his flesh. With Stormlight making an ecstatic pulse within him, he felt a rhythm to the battle, almost like the beat of the Parshendi song. And they did sing. They'd recovered from seeing him drink in the Stormlight and speak the words of the second ideal. They now attacked in waves, fervently trying to get to the bridge and knock it free. Some had leaped to the other side to attack from that direction, but Moash had led bridgemen to respond there. Amazingly, they held. Syl twirled around Kaladin in a blur, riding the waves of Stormlight that rose from his skin, moving like a leaf on the winds of a storm. Enraptured, he'd never seen her like this before. He didn't break his attacks. In a way, there was only one attack, as each strike flowed directly into the next. His spear never stopped, and together with his men, he pushed the Parshendi back, accepting each challenge as they stepped forward in pairs. Killing. Slaughtering. Blood flew in the air, and the dying groaned at his feet. He tried not to pay too much attention to that. They were the enemy. Yet the sheer glory of what he did seemed at odds with the desolation he caused. He was protecting, he was saving, yet he was killing. How could something so terrible be so beautiful at the same time? He ducked the swing of a fine silvery sword, then brought his spear around to the side, crushing ribs. He spun the spear, shattering its already fractured length against the side of the Parshendi's comrade. He threw the spear at a third man, then caught a new one as Lopin tossed it to him. The Herdazian was collecting them from the fallen Alethi nearby to give to Kaladin when needed. When you engaged a man, you learned something about him. Were your enemies careful and precise? Did they bully their way forward, aggressive and domineering? Did they spout curses to make you enraged? Were they ruthless, or did they leave an obviously incapacitated man to live? He was impressed by the Parshendi. He fought dozens of them, each with a slightly different style of combat. It seemed they were sending only two or four at him at a time. Their attacks were careful and controlled, and each pair fought as a team. They seemed to respect him for his skill. Most telling, they seemed to back away from fighting Scar or Teft, who were wounded, instead focusing on Kaladin, Moash, and the other spearmen who showed the most skill. These were not the wild, uncultured savages he had been led to expect. These were professional soldiers who held to an honorable battlefield ethic he had found absent in most of the Alethi. In them, he found what he'd always hoped he would find in the soldiers of the Shattered Plains. That realization rocked him. He found himself respecting the Parshendi as he killed them. In the end, the storm within him drove him forward. He had chosen a course, and these Parshendi would slaughter Dalinar Kholin's army without a moment's regret. Kaladin had committed himself. He would see himself and his men through it. He wasn't certain how long he fought. Bridge 4 held out remarkably well. Surely they didn't fight for very long, otherwise they would have been overwhelmed. Yet the multitude of wounded and dying Parshendi around Kaladin seemed to indicate hours. He was both relieved and oddly disappointed when a figure in plate broke through the Parshendi ranks, releasing a flood of soldiers in blue. Kaladin reluctantly stepped back, heart thumping, the storm within dampened. The light had stopped streaming off his skin noticeably. The continual supply of Parshendi with gems in their braids had kept him fueled during the early part of the fight, but the later ones had come to him without gemstones. Another indication that they weren't the simple-minded subhumans the Light Eyes claimed they were. They'd seen what he was doing, and even if they hadn't understood it, they'd countered it. He had enough light to keep him from collapsing, but as the Alethi pushed back the Parshendi, Kaladin realized how timely their arrival had been. I need to be very careful with this, he thought. The storm within made him thirst for motion and attack, but using it drained his body. The more of it he used, and the faster he used it, the worse it was when he ran out. Alethi soldiers took up perimeter defense on both sides of the bridge, and the exhausted bridgemen fell back, many sitting down and holding wounds. Kaladin hurried over to them.
Report!
3 dead,
Rock said grimly, kneeling beside bodies he'd laid out. Malop, Iris Jax, and Narm. Kaladin frowned in sorrow. Be glad the rest live, he told himself. It was easy to think, hard to accept. How are the rest of you? 5 more had serious wounds, but Rock and Lopin had seen to them. Those 2 were learning quite well from Kaladin's instruction. There was little more Kaladin could do for the wounded. He glanced at Malop's body. The man had taken an axe cut to the arm, severing it and splintering the bone. He'd died from blood loss. If Kaladin hadn't been fighting, he might have been able to... No. No regrets for the moment. Pull back across, he said to the bridgeman, pointing. Teft, you're in command. Moash, you strong enough to stay with me?
Sure am,
Moash said, a grin on his bloody face. He looked excited, not exhausted. All 3 of the dead had been on his side, but he and the others had fought remarkably well. The other bridgemen retreated. Kaladin turned to inspect the Alethi soldiers. It was like looking into a triage tent. Every man had a wound of some sort. The ones at the center stumbled and limped. Those at the outsides still fought, their uniforms bloodied and torn. The retreat had dissolved into chaos. He made his way through the wounded, waving for them to cross the bridge. Some did as he said. Others stood about, looking dazed. Kaladin rushed up to one group that seemed better off than most.
Who's in command here?
It. The soldier's face had been cut across the cheek.
Bright Lord Dalinar.
Immediate command. Who's your captain?
Dead, the man said. And my company lord? And his second?
Stormfather, Kaladin thought.
Across the bridge with you,
he said, then moved on.
I need an officer. Who is in command of the retreat?
Ahead, he could make out a figure in scratched blue shard plate, fighting at the front of the group. That would be Dalinar's son, Adolin. He was busy holding the Barshendi off. Bothering him would not be wise.
Over here,
a man called.
I found Bright Lord Havar. He's commander of the rear guard.
Finally, Kaladin thought, rushing through the chaos to find a bearded light-eyed man lying on the ground, coughing blood. Kaladin looked him over, noting the enormous gut wound.
Who's his second?
Dead, said the man beside the commander. He was light-eyed.
And you are?
Nakum Gavel. He looked young, younger than Kaladin.
You're promoted, Kaladin said. Get these men across the bridge as quickly as possible. If anyone asks, you've been given a field commission as commander of the rear guard. If anyone claims to outrank you, send them to me.
The man started.
Promoted? Who are you? Can you do that?
Someone needs to, Kaladin said.
Go. Get to work.
I go, Kaladin bellowed. Remarkably, the light-eyed man saluted him and began yelling for his squad. Colin's men were wounded, battered, and dazed, but they were well-trained. Once someone took command, orders passed quickly. Squads crossed the bridge, falling into marching formations. Likely in the confusion, they clung to these familiar patterns. Within minutes, the central mass of Colin's army was flowing across the bridge like sand in an hourglass. The ring of fighting contracted. Still, men screamed and died, the anarchic tumult of sword against shield and spear against metal. Kaladin hurriedly pulled the carapace off his armor, enraging the Parshendi didn't feel wise at the moment, then moved among the wounded looking for more officers. He found a couple, though they were dazed, wounded, and out of breath. Apparently those who were still battle-worthy were leading the 2 flanks who held back the Parshendi. Trailed by Moash, Kaladin hurried to the central front line, where the Alethi seemed to be holding the best. Here, finally, he found someone in command. A tall, stately light eyes with a steel breastplate and matching helm, his uniform a darker shade of blue than the others. He directed the fighting from just behind the front lines. The man nodded to Kaladin, yelling to be heard over the sounds of battle.
You command the bridgemen?
I do,
Kaladin said.
Why aren't your men moving across the bridge?
We are the Cobalt Guard,
the man said.
Our duty is to protect Bright Lord Adolin.
The man pointed toward Adolin and his blue shard plate just ahead. The shard bearer seemed to be pushing toward something.
Where's the High Prince?
Kaladin yelled.
We're not sure,
the man grimaced.
His guardsmen have vanished. You have to pull back. The bulk of the army is across. If you remain here, you'll be surrounded. We will not leave Bright Lord Adolin. I'm sorry.
Kaladin looked around. The groups of Alethi fighting at the flanks were barely holding their ground, but they wouldn't fall back until ordered.
Fine,
Kaladin said, raising his spear and pushing his way through to the front line. Here the Parshendi fought with vigor. Kaladin cut down one by the neck, spinning into the middle of a group, flashing out with his spear. His stormlight was nearly gone, but these Parshendi had gemstones in their beards. Kaladin breathed in, just a little so as not to reveal himself to the Alethi soldiers, and launched himself into a full attack. The Parshendi fell back before his furious assault, and the few members of the Cobalt Guard around him stumbled away, looking stunned. In seconds, Kaladin had a dozen Parshendi on the ground around him, wounded or dead. That opened a gap, and he tore through, Moash at his heels. A lot of the Parshendi were focused on Adolin, whose blue shardplate was scraped and cracked. Kaladin had never seen a suit of shardplate in such a terrible state. Stormlight rose from those cracks in much the way it steamed from Kaladin's skin when he held, or used to, a lot of it. The fury of a shardbearer at war gave Kaladin pause. He and Moash stopped just outside of the man's fighting range, and the Parshendi ignored the bridgeman, trying with obvious desperation to take down the shardbearer. Adolin cut down through multiple men at once, but as Kaladin had seen only once before, his blade did not slice flesh. Parshendi eyes burned and blackened, and dozens fell dead, Adolin collecting corpses around him like fruit falling from a ripened tree. And yet Adolin was obviously struggling. His shard plate was more than just cracked. There were holes in parts. His helm was gone, though he'd replaced it with a regular spearman's cap. His left leg limped, nearly dragging. That blade of his was deadly, but the Parshendi drew closer and closer. Kaladin didn't dare step into range.
Adolin Colin,
he bellowed. The man kept fighting.
Adolin Colin,
Kaladin yelled again, feeling a little puff of stormlight leave him, his voice booming. The shardbearer froze, then looked back at Kaladin. Reluctantly, the shardbearer pulled back, letting the Cobalt Guard, using the path opened by Kaladin, rush forward and hold back the Parshendi.
Who are you?
Adolin demanded, reaching Kaladin. His proud, youthful face was slick with sweat, his hair a matted mess of blonde mixed with black.
I'm the man who saved your life, Kaladin said. I need you to order the retreat. Your troops can't fight any longer. My father is out there, Bridgman,
Adolin said, pointing with his overly large blade.
I saw him just moments ago. His Rashadium went for him, but neither horse nor man has returned. I'm going to lead a squad to—
You are going to retreat, Kaladin said, exasperated.
Look at your men, Colin. They can barely keep their feet, let alone fight. You're losing dozens by the minute. You need to get them out. I won't abandon my father,
Adolin said stubbornly.
For the peace of— If you fall, Adolin Colin, these men have nothing. Their commanders are wounded or dead. You can't go to your father. You can barely walk. I repeat, get your men to safety.
The young shardbearer stepped back, blinking at Kaladin's tone. He looked northeastward, toward where a figure in slate gray suddenly appeared on a rock outcropping, fighting against another figure in shard plate.
He's so close.
Kaladin took a deep breath.
I'll go for him. You lead the retreat. Hold the bridge, but only the bridge.
Adolin glared at Kaladin. He took a step, but something in his armor gave out, and he stumbled, going to one knee. Teeth gritted, he managed to rise.
Captain Lord Mallon, Adolin bellowed. Take your soldiers. Go with this man. Get my father out.
The man Kaladin had spoken to earlier saluted crisply. Adolin glared at Kaladin again, then hefted his shard blade and stalked with difficulty toward the bridge.
Moash, go with him, Kaladin said. But do it, Moash, Kaladin said grimly, glancing toward the outcropping where Dalinar fought. Kaladin took a deep breath, tucked his spear under his arm, and dashed off at a dead run. The kobold guard yelled at him, trying to keep up, but he didn't look back. He hit the line of Parshendi attackers, turned and tripped two with his spear, then leaped over the bodies and kept going. Most Parshendi in this patch were distracted by Dalinar's fight or the battle to get to the bridge. The ranks were thin here between the two fronts. Kaladin moved quickly, drawing in more light as he ran, dodging and scrambling around Parshendi who tried to engage him. Within moments, he'd reached the place where Dalinar had been fighting. Though the rock shelf was now empty, a large group of Parshendi were gathered around its base. There, he thought, leaping forward. A horse whinnied. Dalinar looked up in shock as Gallant charged into the open ring of ground the watching Parshendi had made. The Rashadium had come to him. How? Where? The horse should have been free and safe on the staging plateau. It was too late. Dalinar knelt on one knee, beaten down by the enemy shardbearer. The Parshendi kicked, smashing his foot into Dalinar's chest, throwing him backward. A hit to the helm followed. Another, another. The helm exploded, and the force of the hits left Dalinar dazed. Where was he? What was happening? Why was he pinned by something so heavy? Shardplate, he thought, struggling to rise. I'm wearing my shardplate. A breeze blew across his face. Head blows. You had to be careful of head blows, even when wearing plate. His enemy stood over him, looming, and seemed to inspect him, as if searching for something. Dalinar had dropped his blade. The common Parshendi soldiers surrounded the duel. They forced Gallant back, making the horse whinny. He reared. Dalinar watched him, vision swimming. Why didn't the shardbearer just finish him? The Parshendi giant leaned down, then spoke. The words were thick with accent, and Dalinar's mind nearly dismissed them. But here, up close, Dalinar realized something. He understood what was being said. The accent was nearly indecipherable, but the words were in Alethi.
It is you, the Parshendi shardbearer said. I have found you at last.
Dalinar blinked in surprise. Something disturbed the back ranks of the watching Parshendi soldiers. There was something familiar about this scene. Parshendi all around, shardbearer in danger. Dalinar had lived it before, but from the other side. That shardbearer couldn't be talking to him. Dalinar had been hit too hard in the head. He must be delusional. What was that disturbance in the ring of Parshendi watchers?
Sadius,
Dalinar found himself thinking, his mind confused.
He's come to rescue me as I rescued him. Unite them. He'll come,
Dalinar thought.
I know he will. I will gather them.
The Parshendi were yelling, moving, twisting. Suddenly a figure exploded through them. Not Sadius at all. A young man with a strong face and long, curling black hair. He carried a spear. And he was glowing. What? Dalinar thought, dazed. Kaladin landed in the open circle. The two shardbearers were at the center, one on the ground, stormlight trailing faintly from his body. Too faintly. Considering the number of cracks, his gemstones must be almost spent. The other, a Parshendi judging by the size and shape of the limbs, was standing over the fallen one. Great, Kaladin thought, dashing forward before the Parshendi soldiers could collect their wits and attack him. The Parshendi shardbearer was bent down, focused on Dalinar. The Parshendi's plate was leaking stormlight through a large fissure in the leg. So, memory flashing back to the time he rescued Amaram, Kaladin got in close and slammed his spear into the crack. The shardbearer screamed and dropped his blade in surprise. It puffed to mist. Kaladin whipped his spear free and dodged backward. The shardbearer swung toward him with a gauntleted fist, but missed.
Kaladin jumped in again, and, throwing the full weight of his strength behind the blow, rammed his spear into the cracked leg armor again. The shardbearer screamed even louder, stumbling, then fell to his knees. Kaladin tried to pull his spear free, but the man crumpled on top of it, snapping the shaft. Kaladin dodged back, now facing a ring of Parshendi empty-handed, stormlight streaming from his body. Silence. And then, they began speaking again, the words they'd said before.
Neshua Kadal.
They passed it among themselves, whispering, looking confused. Then they began to chant a song he'd never heard before.
Good enough, Kaladin thought, so long as they weren't attacking him.
Dalinar Kholin was moving, sitting up. Kaladin knelt down, commanding most of his stormlight into the stony ground, retaining just enough to keep him going, but not enough to make him glow. Then he hurried over to the armored horse at the side of the ring of Parshendi. The Parshendi shied away from him, looking terrified. He took the reins and quickly returned to the High Prince. Dalinar shook his head, trying to clear his mind. His vision still swam, but his thoughts were reforming. What had happened? He'd been hit on the head and now the Shardbearer was down.
Down?
What had caused the Shardbearer to fall? Had the creature really talked to him? No, he must have imagined that. That and the young spearman glowing. He wasn't doing so now. Holding Gallant's reins, the young man waved at Dalinar urgently. Dalinar forced himself to his feet. Around them, the Parshendi were muttering something unintelligible.
That shard plate, Dalinar thought, looking at the kneeling Parshendi. A shard blade. I could fulfill my promise to Renarin. I could.
The Shardbearer groaned, holding his leg with a gauntleted hand. Dalinar itched to finish the kill. He took a step forward, dragging his unresponsive foot. Around them, the Parshendi troops watched silently. Why didn't they attack? The tall spearman ran up to Dalinar, pulling Gallant's reins.
On your horse, Light Eyes. We should finish him. We could.
On your horse, the youth commanded, tossing the reins at him as the Parshendi troops turned to engage a contingent of approaching Alethi soldiers.
You're supposed to be an honorable one,
the spearman snarled. Dalinar had rarely been spoken to in such a way, particularly by a dark-eyed man.
Well, your men won't leave without you, and my men won't leave without them. So you will get on your horse, and we will escape this death trap. Do you understand?
Dalinar met the young man's eyes, then nodded. Of course. He was right. They had to leave the enemy Shardbearer. How would they get the armor out anyway? Tow the corpse all the way?
Retreat!
Dalinar bellowed to his soldiers, pulling himself into Gallant's saddle. He barely made it. His armor had so little stormlight left. Steady, loyal Gallant sprang into a gallop down the corridor of escape his men had bought for him with their blood. The nameless spearmen dashed behind him, and the Cobalt Guard fell in around them. A larger force of his troops was ahead, on the escape plateau. The bridge still stood, Adolin standing anxiously at its head, holding it for Dalinar's retreat. With a rush of relief, Dalinar galloped across the wooden deck, reaching the adjoining plateau. Adolin and the last of his troops filed along behind him. He turned Gallant, looking eastward. The Parshendi crowded up to the chasm, but did not give chase. A group of them worked on the chrysalis atop the plateau. It had been forgotten by all sides in the fervor. They had never followed before, but if they changed their mind now, they could harry Dalinar's force all the way back to the permanent bridges. But they didn't. They formed ranks and began to chant another of their songs, the same one they sang every time the Alethi forces retreated. As Dalinar watched, a figure in cracked silvery shard plate and a red cape stumbled to their forefront. The helm had been removed, but it was too distant to make out any features on the black and red marbled skin. Dalinar's erstwhile foe raised his shard blade in a motion that was unmistakable. A salute. A gesture of respect. Instinctively, Dalinar summoned his blade, and 10 heartbeats later, raised it to salute in return.
The bridgemen pulled the bridge across the chasm, separating the armies.
Set up triage,
Dalinar bellowed.
We don't leave anyone behind who has a chance at living. The Parshendi will not attack us here.
His men let out a shout. Somehow escaping felt like more of a victory than any gem heart they'd won. The tired Alethi troops divided into battalions. 8 had marched to battle, and they became 8 again, though several had only a few hundred members remaining. Those men trained for field surgery looked through the ranks while the remaining officers got survivor counts. The men began to sit down among the pain spren and exhaustion spren, bloodied, some weaponless, many with torn uniforms. On the other plateau, the Parshendi continued their odd song. Dalinar found himself focusing on the bridge crew. The youth who had saved him was apparently their leader. Had he fought down a shard-bearer? Dalinar hazily remembered a quick, sharp encounter, a spear to the leg. Clearly the young man was both skilled and lucky. The bridgeman's team acted with far more coordination and discipline than Dalinar would have expected of such lowly men. He could wait no longer. Dalinar nudged Gallant forward, crossing the stones and passing wounded, exhausted soldiers. That reminded him of his own fatigue, but now that he had a chance to sit, he was recovering, his head no longer ringing. The leader of the bridge crew was seeing to a man's wound, and his fingers worked with expertise. A man trained in field medicine? Among bridgemen?
Well, why not? Dalinar thought. It's no odder than their being able to fight so well.
Satius had been holding out on him. The young man looked, and for the first time Dalinar noticed the slave brands on the youth's forehead, hidden by the long hair. The youth stood, posture hostile, folding his arms.
You are to be commended, Dalinar said. All of you. Why did your High Prince retreat, only to send you back for us?
Several of the bridgemen chuckled.
He didn't send us back, their leader said. We came on our own, against his wishes.
Dalinar found himself nodding, and he realized that this was the only answer that made sense.
Why? Dalinar asked. Why come for us?
The youth shrugged.
You allowed yourself to get trapped in there quite spectacularly.
Dalinar nodded tiredly. Perhaps he should have been annoyed at the young man's tone, but it was only the truth.
Yes. But why did you come? And how did you learn to fight so well?
By accident, the young man said.
He turned back to his wounded.
What can I do to repay you?
Dalinar asked. The bridgeman looked back at him.
I don't know. We were going to flee from Satius, disappear in the confusion. We might still, but he'll certainly hunt us down and kill us. I could take your men to my camp, make Satius free you from your bondage. I worry that he wouldn't let us go,
the bridgeman said, eyes haunted.
And I worry that your camp would afford no safety at all. This move today by Satius, it will mean war between you two, will it not?
Would it? Dalinar had avoided thinking of Satius. Survival had taken his focus. But his anger at the man was a seething pit deep within. He would exact revenge on Satius for this. But could he allow war between the princedoms? It would shatter Alethkar. More than that, it would destroy the Kolin house. Dalinar didn't have the troops or the allies to stand against Satius, not after this disaster. How would Satius respond when Dalinar returned? Would he try to finish the job, attacking?
No, Dalinar thought. No, he did it this way for a purpose.
Satius had not engaged him personally. He had abandoned Dalinar, but by Alethi standards, that was another thing entirely. He didn't want to risk the kingdom either. Satius wouldn't want outright war, and Dalinar couldn't afford outright war, despite his seething anger. He formed a fist, turning to look at the spearman.
It will not turn to war,
Dalinar said.
Not yet, at least. Well, if that's the case, the spearman said, then by taking us into your camp you commit robbery. The king's law, the codes my men always claim you uphold, would demand that you return us to Sadeus. He won't let us go easily.
I will take care of Sadeus, Dalinar said. Return with me. I vow that you will be safe. I promise it with every shred of honor I have.
The young bridgeman met his eyes, searching for something. Such a hard man he was for one so young. All right, the spearman said. We'll return. I can't leave my men back at camp, and with so many men now wounded, we don't have the proper supplies to run. The young man turned back to his work, and Dalinar rode Gallant in search of a casualty report. He forced himself to contain his rage at Sadeus. It was difficult. No, Dalinar could not let this turn to war, but neither could he let things go back to the way they had been. Sadeus had upset the balance, and it could never be regained. Not in the same way.